Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor. Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swamp.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Schkelly. Aldi. Million. Rumli.
Tribe spoke.
Scheibe Tottenham.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RTP's coverage of Survivor Global for Survivor 41. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to talk about the finale. We have a winner, we have a female winner, everything is going great after the whole season talking about how we can't get a woman winner. Well, Erica proved us all wrong, mostly me, and it's an exciting thing and there is a lot to talk about with this huge finale. So to talk about it, I have a guest who has been binging the entire season so that we could uphold the tradition of talking about US finales. He is my good friend and an Australian Survivor All-Star. Please welcome Nick Iadanza. Nick, thank you for being here.
Shannon, thanks for having me. A very different experience for me this season. The binge. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I've got much to say. So glad we could keep the tradition going and hooray for Erica.
Yes, there's a lot to talk about. I feel like I had to catch you up before this call just on like what the commentary has been, because you have been, for anyone who doesn't know, hasn't been like reading your very late tweets, like you were never going to miss this appointment, but you weren't watching week to week, you weren't listening to the podcast, you weren't on Twitter, like you were very much like in your own bubble binging the season.
Yeah, it was so weird. For so long I felt like I have just been like tapped into the community. I've had it like hooked to my veins. This is from like way back. Everyone, like, you know, if you don't know, I was one of the very first people on Rob Has a Podcast, like back in when it was a website with yellow background and a pencil logo. I've been there from beginning. Yeah. And then
really dragging old school RHAP.
Yeah. And then playing and then getting the podcast. I've been so tapped in for so long. There hasn't been a season that I haven't not been spoiled for, but like been in the know for, like, you know, of like the mechanics for so long. And having played twice, I just needed a break after doing everything with Talking Tribal for, you know, Australian season. I just needed a bit of a pause. That was what this season was for me. Was always going to make it, like you said, got to uphold the tradition. But I decided early on, I'm just going to do it as a binge and see what it's like on the other side. Say it was kind of nice.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to get those takes, because so much of what we want to discuss is tied to the commentary, is tied to like Erica's edit and how people were feeling about that at the time, is tied to Xander's edit and kind of like the season-long arguments about what a chance he had and how that kind of came out in Danny's exit interviews last week. And I feel like just getting your takes on it and how you kind of viewed things without all the outside noise will be kind of fascinating one. So I feel like it worked really, really well. Before we dive into it, as you said, you were covering Australian Survivor with me on Talking Tribal, and then we did the finale on RHAP. It's been a few months. And how's everything going? I know we're doing this, you know, in your school holidays, maybe a little bit more time to think about Survivor, which is also a good thing.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple of months. You know, my son is now 7 months old, and he's, this morning I'm fairly certain I heard him say dad, but I can't, nothing to verify. He could have just been doing a poo. We've been full on family mode. The school year is over, thank God. All my teachers out there, you know, it's a much needed break. And now just looking forward to Christmas, reuniting with family from Melbourne, and hoping that COVID doesn't, you know, rear its head and cancel Christmas at the very last minute.
Yeah.
So I've been good. I've been very good. Thanks for asking, Shen.
I feel like, hoping COVID doesn't ruin the holidays. It's probably like a general sentiment being felt the world over. So, as I've been saying for like 2 years of this now, thinking of everyone through increasingly trying times. But definitely, we do have survivors always to distract. So I guess you've binged it. Big picture thoughts on the season and the way that the season ended. I'd love to hear them.
Okay, I need to preface all of this with the fact that I have moved down the scale from super fan, intensely commentary, ins and outs, much closer to the casual side of things. And I think it's a really interesting way to slide the scale. I think a lot of people start off as casual viewers and then build themselves up to super fans. I was a super fan from day one, and I've been a super fan for 20 years, and then have made the transition over to casual. So it's an interesting way to do it, because I can watch the show and I'm just appreciating it for the show that it is. I'm not taking the twists too seriously. I'm very rarely getting incensed or like having these kind of like highs, ups and downs. I'm enjoying it as a TV product. But when something tickles my fancy, like when they put an extra vote in there, I can draw upon all that well of information that I've got. And it's actually a really unique way to watch it. And I would love to hear from anyone else who's, you know, made that transition.
No, it reminds me of Josh Wigler. Like Josh did this. And then I listened to him on the voicemails with Rob earlier in the season. And he's like, he is removed from it, but then he also can just like draw upon these references so easily. And I messaged him after. I'm like, you remind me of my friend who was like deeply, deeply religious for like 10 years and is now not religious, but then we'll just like pull out like a reference from scripture. And I'm like, that's what like you and Survivor. And he's like, I don't know how to take that because that's a lot. I'm like, yeah, no, but that's literally how it feels like with you.
Yeah. And look, I'm not saying that I'm going to be being a casual forever, but like it was a nice break. And so big picture, to go back to your question, to watch this this season, I didn't go in with all these kind of like, this is the future of the franchise in its little hand, and you know, it's only 20 days or 25 days or whatever it
26
is.
26 days? How much of a casual are you, Nick? Wait, 5 days? What?
How many was it?
26.
26. There, see?
Oh my gosh. All right, that's how far we've gone. Okay, I'm now caught up to where you're at.
Totally. No, it's so liberating, Shannon. I know that you will never get there, right?
No.
You will never get there.
If I get there, something has gone deeply wrong. Like, I've snapped.
Deeply. So, I will get on a plane and I'll fly to your city and check, do a welfare check because there is something, No, so big picture, without all that expectation and the pressure and on this season, I really enjoyed it. I really, truly enjoyed it. I liked the way that they were kind of keeping it fresh, or even just like the little things of Jeff talking to the audience. I know they mean nothing and they also are cheesy, but it was just kind of made like, you know, it just kind of like, I felt like it removed the staleness that perhaps Survivor was getting. So that was interesting. The cast was amazing. It does show how much downtime is in the American seasons that they can trim out all the fat and still maintain that it doesn't actually feel like it didn't to me ever feel like it wasn't 39 days. And I don't know what the online commentary has been around that, but it just felt like normal old Survivor to me in terms of like length and pace. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And I think we've got a really good run to the end, and I think a very worthy winner.
Yeah, so I think that it's an interesting thing because in terms of like length and stuff, it is something that we've spoken about so much. It probably did play out fairly regularly, like from a TV perspective, not a lot translated, but like you can get into all those details as we have in the commentary, and like which I think are relevant in terms of like how pace affects, you know, the votes. Like the Sean was even saying in exit interviews, like maybe if he'd had more time to kind of sit with like the fights at the camp out were having, for example, like maybe you do turn, but they kind of just were powering through. Like it definitely had an impact, and it's an impact that obviously when you're digging into it every week for hours, like it's something that you will kind of talk about, which we did to a degree. But when you're binging it, like I can see how it's just like the product in front of you. So it's a really interesting thing.
I just felt like it never felt like the pace of the real-time show, real-time experience was affecting the TV show as a binge ever. Mm.
I think it did feel it went pretty much as well as it could have gone. I said last week, it was just pretty much that they'd just be like, we merge and it's day 14. You'd be like, oh yeah. Like just like that weird kind of moment for me, but you didn't even know how many days it was. So like you're not as attached to those like details as I was, but yeah. So taking it from that, I mean, I was telling you before, like a lot of the conversation was around like the kind of winner we would get, the kind of play style that would be validated. The edit for Erica, like so much of that conversation, which we'll have on this podcast, has really dominated it. But I feel like you had like a pure sense of it. Like you even saying to me pre-podcast that like you felt like Erica was a big part of it. And maybe like her whole story kind of just presented itself to you. Whereas like if you're watching it week to week, you're like, well, it's another week where Erica got zero confessionals. Like here are the stats, like here are the numbers. But for you, you just kind of saw it like as it was, and you felt there was stuff there.
Definitely. I really did feel like that there was stuff for Erica. I felt like she was integral to the show. I felt like that they presented her, the dynamic that she brought, not only just with her as Heather, her and Heather as a pair, but I felt like there was lots of conversations. You know, I remember people talking about, you know, we've got to, you know, get her out on Luvu beforehand. And there's all the thing with the, like,
at least you have the tribe names.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
Although I can't pronounce the merge. What is it? Viacana?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that I would have known the merge tribe name. I don't know that I could have readily accessed it. So that was good. Yeah.
Well, it kind of, because in Italian, like via is like street. So it's like the street, kind of street. Like, that's what I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. I think that she was she wasn't the main part of the season, but I felt like she was definitely a key cog in the wheel. So I'd love to hear your takes on it.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it because there are stats around. There's stats around her editing. Like, it's great that you saw it that way and other people did see it more strongly than I did. But at the end of the day, like, there are stats we're going to have to talk to about, like, over-editing and under-editing. And, yeah, it's all very important. We'll get to it. But I wanted to know as well, like, for the finale, maybe it's a bit hard to separate because you're not doing it week to week. But, like, how did you feel about the, like, finale episode in itself?
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Okay, I'll say this. I was really rooting for Erica from probably once Evie left.
Mm-hmm.
Erica was my horse in the race, so I was focusing on her. And I felt like it was kind of obvious that she was going to win. Like, okay. I don't know. Did you feel that?
No, like, not at all. I mean, I really, really didn't see it. There were people who did think that she would strongly win. I guess you never know, like, how tight to spoiler things are, although maybe it is people's great read. Someone who came on several weeks ago onto the podcast with Rob was Sophie, who came on and felt really strongly about Erica. And it's funny because Erica ends up with, like, a similar amount of confessionals to Sophie. They're probably, like, in a similar mold of winner. So, like, I feel like she saw herself in that. I didn't see it, and I didn't think that that was the way that US Survivor would go. Like, I feel like I said at the time, like, if it was Australian Survivor, I would see her path more strongly. But I also feel like the way that the jury was presented to us and the way the perception of players was presented to us, to me, was quite divorced from what it actually was. And my biggest con about the finale would be that I feel we were getting information that we had never been told, and it was a little bit dissociating for me. So, like, definitely the stuff, like, we were spoiled by Danny last week on Xander being GOAT, but, like, had we not been, I feel like I would have been really taken aback by, like, how much that just kind of crept up when I feel we had not been seeing that on the show. With Erica, the fact that it was like, well, now Erica's the biggest threat, which we hadn't really been seeing for, like, you know, Shan had been saying it weeks ago, but we hadn't really been seeing that for weeks. Ricard saying stuff about, like, Erica not being, like, hugely social, which I think people would just have assumed that she was social just based on the fact that she seems like a really, like, lovely person. We kind of seem to conflate those things a lot of the time. So I felt like I was getting, like, a lot of information about how people felt, and it was just, like, I had a bit of whiplash trying to make sense of that. And for me, yeah, like, looking back at some of, like, the jury perceptions through the post-merge just kind of changed my analysis. So I didn't see it as much, and I didn't see her pathway as much, but then, you know, it's definitely been elevated, like, through that finale content and some external content about, like, what we were kind of missing.
Right. Right. Well, look, to me, like, I felt that she was the one who was going to win because the character of Shan and Ricard, to me, they were the main story.
Yeah.
I felt like there's just no way that those two people are getting to the end. I thought it was, I was plugged in after the first episode and I saw, like, you know, Stephen tweeting about Shan's winner edit. And then I think it became so obvious that it was like, okay, cool, we can discount her as I was watching. And then I thought there's no way they're going to let Ricard get to the end. And I thought that, I don't know, it just, to me, it just felt like Erica's story. I don't know. I can't explain why. I think it was because you could very easily discount Heather. Mm-hmm. I thought that there's no way they're going to let Ricard and Shan get to the end. I thought that Xander, no one is ever going to award him the money because he's so young. But I think Xander is an absolute sweetheart. Like, I really love that guy. But I just felt like I could discount him. And then I thought, like, is Danny going to win? It's like, maybe. Like, he was the only one that I was considering. To me, it just felt very obvious. So, and I'm not saying that to kind of brag because I did not pick her as the winner from the very beginning. But I'm a very interested. I think it's an interesting study to have been removed and to have a different viewpoint from other people who have been like analyzing it day by day.
I think I just look at it in terms of the US format. Like in terms, I never saw Shan. I felt like she was too far out in front. But for someone like Ricard, in like terms of him getting to the end, like he was one challenge from being at the final four with a double chance, possibly one challenge from winning, and possibly Erica's advantage away from winning the whole game. So for me, when I'm thinking like get to the end, like it doesn't seem that hard for me for these big threats to get to the end. But then Erica comes through and the threats do get taken out and she does come through with this middle game to win. But I'm just looking at it with that US format and thinking,
yeah,
someone like that could make it, as an example. Or like someone like Deshaun, who's had a louder game, like that's usually the thing that people like more than necessarily like a more subtle game. But I think there's something really interesting happening at the moment. The first thing is that I remember we spoke after season 39, and though it had been another man winning, I said with Tommy winning with this like beta game, even though he's a man, it opens a door that a beta strategic woman could win in this way now that a different play style has been validated. And I feel like Erica really made good on that. The other thing is, I think that this jury was so tapped into, like, not unlike you at the moment, but like really tapped into like the dialogue and the conversation around like A, demographic, but B, like different play styles being validated. Like the fact that the whole jury were like, that's how I wanted to play. It was very refreshing. And I think the time off and having like super fans in the cast really gave it that sense that like they wanted to maybe in a way be the change, but also just validate what they found was really kind of a good Survivor game. Which should be up to every jury. Every jury should validate what they like in a Survivor game. And this jury clearly saw it this way. And the next jury might go back to liking flashy big moves, or they might not. Like, that's what a jury vote should be. And I feel that recently it's been quite dictated, quite homogenized around, like, you should like big moves. They should tick this box to, like, win the game. And it shouldn't be this, like, dynamic thing. But I feel like this jury were very set on their values and their, like, refreshing values being validated. And I feel like that was a big part of Erica's win. And that maybe I had seen it in that homogenized way when it was more dynamic than I'd maybe given it credit for.
I think that's the exact right take on it. And I think the way the jury did it was excellent. And I think that it's because of the time off.
Mm.
And it's like the whole drop the four, keep the one is basically saying, let's start fresh with our understanding of what Survivor is and what we actually care about. And there's you know, racial implications, there's gender implications, there's play style implications, and I think that the jury did a really good job of balancing all of those things. I was really impressed with the jury. Like, that's a jury that I feel like I would have wanted to have been on.
Yeah, I think when you have players like Evie and Tiffany, who are like leading Ponderosa, and they're both saying that they're kind of jealous. Even Danny's saying that they're jealous of the game that Erica played. That's a jury that's thinking about it in a different way. And I do think that being a part of the conversation and the time off really does help with it. It's something that we were saying a few weeks ago about how they're talking about how women don't win and how men often get the credit. So that's something that actually could have been bad for women, because now women are a big threat, because they know that, like, that's so well known that people want to reward women at the end. So with Erica making it to the end, she gets to like make good on the fact that it has been so unfair to women. And to her credit, she gets there to get that respect that has been overlooked, and that people are aware that it's been overlooked, and that they can now, like, you know, pay her for that. So it's a really interesting thing, because it is so tied to the commentary, but it also, it's an interesting thing to think about as well, because Xander, which we'll talk about at the final four, who has been like the alpha player, like really like taking risks and like being individual and being flashy. The flashy move is to Underwood it, is to give up immunity and take out Erica. Had he done that, had he gone full alpha, had he lent into what Survivor has been through most of the modern seasons, he probably takes out Erica, and we probably do get probably Deshaun, another man winning, but it's that beta switch to actually let Erica go through, and then the jury being able to, like, again, as they did for Tommy, but especially this jury to validate that that's a move for Erica and a misread for Xander, and like really be focused on read and social game and awareness over necessarily like the fact that he won a challenge. That then switches it to getting like a woman winner and a more like beta strategic winner. So it's those like small switches in perception and also in decision making for Xander that takes it in this direction. But it was a game of inches. Like, don't, you know, like, it's not like this was like a done deal. You know, Erica's sitting possibly with Heather, who's a go to the final six, and like four other men. So, like, you know, we have to be thinking about the fact that like this could have gone another way, but it went in the way that it did. And it was those couple of like key decisions and perceptions, I think, that drove it in that direction.
Okay, well, can we just play that out for a second and think about it, that we've just said that the jury and season 41 is about this is a jury that are willing to kind of reevaluate mm-hmm. traditional notions of what counts in final tribal council. Xander does that move. Eric is gone. Xander is now sitting at the end. I believe that that would not have made any difference because none of those people want to give $1 million to someone so young. Mm-hmm. I genuinely, having played twice, I know that's a thing. I genuinely believe that that would mm-hmm. not have happened.
Yeah.
But now Heather's in the end. Has the jury's viewpoint shifted so much that they would then want to try and destabilize the notion of the older woman making the end? Or is Heather was Heather just too far gone? Now, she was definitely too far gone in the edit, but I think that is there an argument to be made that Erica going gives Heather a win?
So I'm so glad you asked this because doubting everything I know, as I did after this finale, I did have to sit and be like, am I going to extend myself to the idea that Heather could have won? And I found every piece of research that I could possibly find from every exit interview, from every interview about like what chances she could have had, because Ricard says he would have voted for her, right? But if Erica wasn't there, but then the jury at like her Ponderosa, I felt like weren't really getting up and giving her hugs. So I felt like bad on her for that. And I feel like the perception of her the whole season was like Erica's a threat and Heather's kind of like taking up space and is just like more disposable. Like Deshaun said his idea of final three was Xander and Heather. Like these are all of the quotes I'm taking. And then like right at the end of like my research, I listened to Heather on RHAP and she's like, yeah, I definitely couldn't have won. I didn't have good jury management. I'm like, Heather, I'm like, why are you like, I don't know. But she's saying that like if she had won Fire, so that's her sitting next to Erica. So I don't know, maybe she thinks like without Erica, if she had a chance, but she explicitly says that she has bad jury management and that the jury didn't respect her game. So I try to extend myself. I try to be like, look outside the box. You've been seeing things wrong. Like maybe your jury perception is wrong, but I still truly don't think that Heather had a shot. And by her own admission, it seems that she is also leaning that way. But I tried. Okay. I really tried.
No, that's really interesting, but as someone who's been on a jury who's had to completely change their frame of reference between the final three and the final yeah. tribal council, I can tell you that until you're faced with the three mm-hmm. choices or the two choices in front of you, you really cannot say what you would do. And I want, you know, there's always that part that's like, well, what would have happened? Is there that chance? And that's not what we're here to discuss today, but
I guess.
Yeah, I guess that was just something that if we're talking about them reevaluating, could they have reevaluated? Probably the bigger curse that it's not just about like women not winning, it's older women winning mm-hmm. and older women being goats at the end.
The mom, that yeah, is, for sure.
Yeah, the mom. That to me is a far greater, mm-hmm. More prevalent idea. In that there's always the goat, that's always the mom, or you know, and I just feel like I wonder if they could have taken this opportunity to, you know, strip that, I believe.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. In terms of, like, them not making a decision until the moment, I do feel this was a final tribal council that didn't necessarily change minds. Like, it happens. I definitely, like, Survivor South Africa this year, I feel like the final tribal council is what made the decision happen. I don't feel that happened here, but maybe with a different performance or a more, without Erica being so far out in front, without her being there, maybe it was more even and maybe that could have happened. So I do think that this was quite a big miss on the reunion. And I know that like it wouldn't have been with the final tribal council, but I thought one of the great things you have is you have a bunch of people talking about it without having like been a part of the conversation or watched the edit. And I just wish that with that really raw content, Jeff would have said, okay, Heather's in the final three, like, what's the jury voting for? And poll the jury, which they often do in a reunion. But, like, without even seeing the edit, I feel like that would have been one of the truest representations we could have got.
Definitely.
The final tribal, and that was just, like, it frustrates me that we didn't get that.
Definitely, definitely. And I, again, to bring it back to that same experience I was talking about, when we're at the, spoiler, if you haven't watched season one of Australian Survivor,
no,
30 seconds.
It's fine. It's your season. It's fine. It's part of the fabric of the podcast.
After Elle was voted out, I'd do that poll. I think it's still on the Jury Villa video. I'd do the poll. I say, everyone, put your hand up if you would have voted for Elle, and everyone put their hand up. Mm. And it was like, that is a true representation, not like watching it later and going, oh, Elle wasn't really in the show. Yeah. Nah, mm-hmm. I'm not going to put my hand up because I'll look dumb to the audience that Elle wasn't in the show. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So
and that's what they could have had.
Yes.
And they wouldn't have seen Heather's edit or anything like that. Like, Jeff, just stop eating pizza and ask them for 1 second who they would have voted for. Anyway, it's fine. We move on from that. But I do think it's really interesting because of the matchup that we had with some of these final contenders. And I want to talk about Final Tribal Council and particularly the final three, because I feel like, to me, there were emotional highs of the finale. Like, Xander and Ricard's conversation was probably the highlight for me, because I really do believe the season is about the cast and the people. But I really also enjoyed that the final three were really closely matched. Like, they all had extreme highs. They all had flaws. They all had something that the other two didn't have. And I wonder if that was, like, more touched upon, because I feel like we didn't get a lot of them dragging each other. But, like, any of them could have done that in some capacity, because there were flaws there to kind of mark out with the others. So it was a really, really even matchup for me that I thought was really fun. And, yeah, I thought I want to talk through the final three. But how did you feel, like, the matchup of these final three?
I felt like Erica was a clear winner, but going into it, I thought that Deshaun was going to get more votes than he did.
Mm.
I didn't think that it would be like a near blowout. I just didn't see anyone voting for Xander. I felt like, and again, I know I've already said it, I do think the age thing is the deciding factor. I thought that what people were going to do is they're going to go in there and say, Xander, you know, this was great, you know, that was great, you know, and give him his little prop up, but like, I think it was a known fact amongst them that they weren't going to vote for him. But I don't think he knew that, which is so sad.
Yeah.
That's so sad because, and I've said it before, like, the whole time I was watching this whole season, like, saying to my wife, because we both teach teenage boys, right? We both work at teenage boys, all boys schools. We're both in high schools. He is you can just tell he is a genuinely sweet young man. Someone who I would be really proud to have as my son. I think he's really measured.
So
I do, honestly, I think he's really measured in the way that he speaks.
Yeah.
I think he's measured in the way that he speaks. I think he's thoughtful. I think that he is, I think he's so earnest. And like, I remember trying to explain what that word meant to some teenage boys, like, that I was teaching, and saying that, like, one of the key characteristics I look for in a young man is someone who's earnest. And I just feel like he is. And he just seems so likable and genuine that as I could see, like, the tribal council getting away from him, I was just like, oh, you poor boy. Like, come back in 10 years. Try again in 10 years.
Oh, he'll be there, but it'll be like his fifth appearance. Like, Xander is the, you know, he's the fan favorite for the new era. Like, they're definitely.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I do. He's in the mold. He's in the mold of what they usually want, being like, with like the long hair and the young guy, and he's good looking and he can find idols and he can give good confessionals, but it's for the new era, and that there's like that sensitivity there. That's how I see it. It's like, he's not what that guy has been in the past. Like, he's that guy, but make it 2021, like, give him a social conscience, like, have him be like this empathetic person. And I think that's perfect. He's kind of like Jonah from Superstore, but like in a like Aussie type Survivor player.
That's so funny. I'm really glad that you think that, because I was like, well, the poor guy's not going to get another chance to do this again. And like,
that's you being divorced from the commentary. Like, the casuals love Xander.
Okay, great. I'm really happy with that. There you go, Xander. You've got that.
Yeah, no, I think Xander's got a long future in Survivor, but I do agree.
Really?
That, yeah, so really, yeah, no, he's beloved. He's got standards, Nick. This is what you need to know. I think for Xander, yeah, we did kind of see the show through
standards.
His eyes.
I just got that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I really am. Okay, that's great.
Okay, no, so I think that we saw it through his eyes, and it was just like devolving so rapidly through the finale, where the jury were like getting subtitled on their like derision for him. And I think it was more than age. Like, apparently he came across as inauthentic, and probably it is being that earnest. Maybe it is a young guy who seems to have that big a heart, and people didn't see things like giving up rewards and stuff as genuine. But I think he seemed like a really genuine guy, and probably watching it back, maybe they give him a little bit more credit. But even like someone like Nastia in Final Tribal Council saying that, like, that moment where Xander came up and offered him comfort, I was like, I could see that moment, because that is who Xander is. And I agree, he has like a beautiful soul.
Yeah, okay, let me give you an example from school, right? So people are saying that, like, he's not genuine, or people think that it was, like, calculated, because that's not what a young teenage boy should be, right? I teach this young boy who is beautiful. He's such a lovely young boy. It's very similar to all these things I'm saying Xander is. I was with a staff member at school. I saw this kid walk into a classroom, and at lunch and recess, they're not supposed to be in the classroom. And the person next to me going, what's I won't say his real name. We'll call him Billy. Like, what's Billy doing in the room over there? And I said, I trust him. He's fine. And like, no, I bet you he's up to something. And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, he's a really good kid. And then we went in there, and he had gone in there to pick up rubbish, you know, in an empty classroom. And it's just like, because that's just not what you expect from a teenage boy, right? Mm. You expect them to be a little bit more sneaky, a little bit mischievous. And I think that Xander maybe is like, well, fell victim to that. Like, I'm not Bart Simpson. Like, I'm more Martin Prince than Bart Simpson.
Yeah, no, I totally do see it. I think maybe, I'm not going to say it's like toxic masculinity, but there is something about if he's meant to be the provider, and like some of the game stuff validated it. Like, he does break from Yasa, and he is seen to be in a game sense self-interested, but he will come up and talk to you about your family and genuinely care. And maybe some people couldn't just marry those two things. Where like the Yasa stuff, I feel, and he even said it, like, it felt like it wasn't really his fault. Like, he was on the outside, he was just more aware of it than maybe they knew, and then he didn't want to protect them and they felt like burned by that. But then he will go and give up his reward for you, and I feel like maybe because of his archetype, people just couldn't see him like extending that hand as being as genuine as I think that it was. But either way, the perception of him was poor, and it's like being validated by what the jury like want to see in him. And like, I do think some stuff for Xander was overblown. Like, they really didn't seem to give a lot of credit for the implicit immunity of the idol because he was being carried. But at the end of the day, like, the idol did say that, at least in the Tiffany vote, like, implicit immunity was used to a degree. And then they're like, you're so on him for not taking out Erica in the final four. And I do disagree with the decision, and it is something we'll talk about. But, you know, no one since Shan is coming for Erica. And, like, no one's talking about her at 6 or 7 when she's not immune. So, and then she's like the big threat. How could you not? Like, Ricard equating Erica to the threat level that he had, and you took me up and not Erica. It's like, yeah, those two things did not seem synonymous to us in the edit. So he was getting a lot of heat, and I don't think that, he could win or lose it from there. Like, I think they kind of wanted to see what they did from him, and that's completely at a point on him, at a point on the perception of the jury, that, like, there was just no way for him to win this, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, being on a jury, like they say, you're not allowed to talk about the game when you're there, and you're like, yeah, okay, like, we're going to talk about the game. Like, you can't be in our rooms 24/7. I think that that is a perception that evolves more and more as each person is voted out, and that changes, and the conversation starts to grow and crystallize and add, and it becomes this kind of giant pastiche of opinions that are completely divorced from the game. And that is, it's difficult to read, because I think that, you know, the jury that I've been on, that they would never have anticipated how some of the people voted, myself included. But it does evolve and change as what's happening at Jury Villa, at Ponderosa. And I just think that, you know, he was probably still stuck on the, like, Deshaun is the threat because he's got friends on the jury. You know, I think he was still stuck on that vibe. But his friends on the jury were perhaps being taken in a different direction. So, you know, I feel bad for him. And, yes, he did have the wrong read, but it's a difficult thing to read. And I do know of jurors who've sat on not only my jury but other juries who purposely try to distract the other people in the game by giving inauthentic reactions to things so that they mess up the people in the game. And that really makes me think that the jury should be behind one of those like double glass, those like reverse glass windows in interrogation rooms. So I feel bad for him, because I do think he was stuck on the wrong thing, which was the thing in the game, but not the thing in the jury villa.
The jury reactions to me kind of seem to come really out of nowhere, and they're not behind glass. And at a point, I'm just like, Xander, look at the jury. Like, they're not enjoying this, like, pivot, you know? But that was, I guess, something he could have done, but he wasn't picking up, and they, like, really buried his read, which is something that we'll talk about. But I feel like for Xander, like, if I was Xander, I would say Erica smashed an hourglass that probably saved her, which we can talk about. Deshaun had do or die, which definitely saved him. Like, I didn't rely on any of that. Like, it was just me.
Easily debunkable, though, with the idol. Easily debunkable.
What's his idol that he's found? That's not like a twist that's been like put in the game. Like, that's more like those twists to me are more luck, where it's like an idol's always like, that's like saying you've won a challenge. Like, that's something you've earned in the game. It's always been a part of the game.
Yeah, but the twisty nature of that idol,
The twisty nature of the idol was like terrible for him. Like if anything, like he made it through twists that were against him, not having a vote, for example, and having to like have such a public idol, which was not his fault because he has to say it out loud. Like he, I think, you know, navigated the twist without help, with them damning him the most, and he like probably navigated that the best. Like that's what I would say if I were him sitting next to these two people.
Yeah,
but I think it was never going to happen
unless you give context like that. Those three things seem fairly similar. Sorry, go on.
Well, I think that if I were in the position of any of the final three, I would be trying to focus on what I had that the others lacked. So for Xander, maybe it is that sense of lack. For Deshaun, he definitely had the most control. Like, Xander had, like, so little agency through the merge. Erica as well. Like, Deshaun could have said, hey, on Luvu, I decided whether, like, Erica was going to live or die, which we can talk about as well. Like, Deshaun's one who had the control and possibly, like, the most social game, but then also, like, the most actively negative social game. And then Erica, I think, could speak to like a consistency that the others didn't have. Like she was part of every vote. She was never blindsided. That's what I would talk about as well. Like she never had the lows that the others did. So I wonder if there was more of that piling on that we didn't see, but I just felt like all of them like really had that opportunity because they were, to me, like similarly matched in all having, you know, highs and lows, which often isn't true of a final three, where they all really had, I think, beyond the perception of Xander, like something to speak to in their game that should have given them a fighting chance. But then also like, and none of them had played like really like the most dominant flashy, like Tony style game. So they all could have spoken to that, but I feel like we didn't really get a lot of that in what we saw Final Tribal Council.
I think what all three of them perhaps lacked from like, and in terms of what Erica probably did better at Final Tribal Council is like conveying that killer instinct. And like, you don't have to win by being a killer. You just have to show that like, I've got the instinct, right? And like, if I need to, I can throw down. Like I'm not this kind of meek and mild person. And like, I just feel like he just lacks that killer instinct, or like he wasn't jumping on every opportunity that all of them were presented, right? Like Danny did a really good job of being like, and you, and like, and now you, and like, and now you, they all were presented the opportunity. And I think Eric was the only one who kind of like took the bull by the horns in the Final Tribal Council. I think, like, for example, when, do you know when Liana made that joke about, like, Xander, I've got a question, do you have an idol kind of thing?
Mm.
Like, yes, it's just like a joke, and like, Liana probably trying to get a last minute, you know, a bit of camera time or whatever. Like, you know, that was, I thought it was funny. I liked it. But he just kind of sat there grinning. Take that moment and say, do you know what, Liana? Like, I don't have an idol. And like, but one of the things I will always live with is like, how happy I am that you and I had this love hate relationship and, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, take every opportunity. And my family say I'm an over communicator because I always talk too much, and maybe this is where I can't understand when people who are under communicators, and maybe that's why he seems a bit more earnest. But like the fact that he doesn't take those opportunities, it's like you're leaving the door wide open for Erica, who's very articulate, to come in and take all those opportunities. Like the way she took that, like the, to me it seems the opposite of like, you know, when he gave the truth bomb thing, the kamikaze,
yeah,
when that okay, so and she turned around and said, I didn't know that, but I know that now, and like, you know, like patted him on the leg, and that I thought that was such a brilliant, just a, such a brilliant way to take that moment and own it and draw power from it. And I think that's what you needed a Final Tribal Council. And Xander didn't have it. And I feel like Deshaun, he felt really sleepy in the Final Tribal Council.
Deshaun came in and even said in exits that like he was kind of not hitting it out of the park, even with like softball questions that Danny was giving him. I think it's underrated. And I think it's something we've seen in all three tribal councils this year, how much easier it is, not to take anything away from Erica, because she was amazing in Final Tribal Council. She says that she just wanted to get to the end and pitch her case, and she has like a background in communications, which, you know, allowed her to be so good. So all credit to her for exactly executing on that plan. But when you're running downhill and you can pick up on the jury's derision for your opponent or opponents, and they like you, it's that much easier to be quippy and fun and nice and like build on that momentum. Whereas like if you're feeling the opposite and you can see that they're not liking you, I think it's really, really hard to like push back against that tide. Like if I think about like Nicole versus Smash, like Smash is apparently getting buried and Nicole can be fun and smiley and like she's getting like a lot of kindness from the jury, and then she can build on that and she's getting better and better. Like if something's going well, you build on that. And I think Erica as well could see, and she came in with that front position, and she maintained that position and she didn't lose it. But she can be making jokes like, hit me up on FaceTime and stuff. Like, imagine if Xander was like, yeah, guys, let's FaceTime. They'd be like, we hate you, Xander. You know, like, he can't make those jokes because he's not doing it to the same jury. And I think it gets missed that not everyone in the final tribal council is speaking to the same jury. They're speaking to different juries. Erica's jury, to her credit, to the way that the jury respects her, to the relationships that she's formed, for sure. But her jury is different to Xander's jury, and it's different to Deshaun's jury. They all treat them in different ways. And of course, it's a lot easier to speak to 8 smiley faces who want to like you versus 8 who have made up their mind about you being a certain way. And I think it takes a very special kind of player to look in the eye of someone who doesn't want to like them and turn it around. Some people can do it, but I just think it's really, really hard to do that.
Definitely. But like, she even, and they said it, and she said it as well, that like, I don't have great relationships with everyone on the jury. Like, I have my little relationships. Mm-hmm. Yet she actively took the opportunity to bring in those other people that she didn't really know that well, that mm-hmm. she probably played in the game for like 2-3 days. Like, you know, I think she actually did that. Like, she didn't let, you've got 1 hour, you know, like, it's like 1 hour left. Like, do not let, it's kind of like my thoughts. And I give this advice to people when they go into the audition for Survivor. I say to them, and the advice I gave myself was, this is probably going to go for 40 minutes. If they're not talking about you, then you've already messed up. Like, mm-hmm. like if there's a question to someone else and you're not involved, then you're fading into the background and you're not going to get what you want, which is to be recognized to get on the show. You're at Final Tribal Council. You've got 1 hour. Interject. Take the moment. You know, build on. If someone's speaking to you directly, Liana, like, made a joke to him. She made a joke to him. And I know we might not have seen it in the edit, what he said, but, you know, seize that moment and run with it. Like, you know that Jeff has literally just said, I think that's it. Does anyone have anything else to say? Liana makes a joke about you that everyone laughs with, that you have a chance to parlay into being, you know, this moment that you actually like, and this awesome moment. That was probably one of my favorite moments of the whole season. And he just let it slide by. It's like, that's inexcusable to me.
I do think Erica made the most of those little details. Again, she's building on, I think, even being someone who was told to us is not broadly social. I think she has like positive relationships and then like neutral relationships, whereas Deshaun had like negative relationships and Xander has the disrespect. Like, I don't think she has that negativity. But the way she's like bringing in, for example, Shan, I really love that moment where she like credits Shan with seeing her threat level, because then it's that I told you so mentality where it's like, Shan, you have to vote for me because you were the one saying I was a big threat. Like, don't you want to make good on that? Like, you were right. We kind of both win in that way. Like, I win the $1 million and you get to be right, which sometimes is as nice as $1 million. So I really like that little moment of her bringing Shan in. I think that she did a lot well, for sure. But, and then for Deshaun and Xander, they took accountability, and I think a lack of accountability for like George and Smash as losing finalists is here kind of not doom them, because I don't know if they could have won. Smash could have probably, but I think it really hurt them to not kind of let that in as much. Whereas Deshaun, he fights back a little, but he's in such a hard situation where Ricard is like, he either has to agree with Ricard that he's like the worst person ever, or like pettily fight with this juror. But he lets some of it in. Xander as well says like some of it was luck, some of it was read, and they both kind of take accountability, and it still is just never going to be enough with this jury. So I think like Erica capitalized on that position, but for the both of them, I don't know that there's much that they could have done. Even though I think that she had the strongest performance, I don't think that they like lost it there.
I think it would be demoralizing to know that Ricard is stumping for you, for someone else.
Yeah.
And you know that he's been doing it for the last 3 days. You know, or however many days he's been in the thing. It's just like, like that would be intimidating. Like, because he's a powerful presence. People obviously respect him because he played the game so well. And now you know that not only is he going to be stumping for her here, like he's been doing it for days. Like, how much has that incepted other people? Deshaun saying that his points weren't true is like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that's the way to say it. I don't know how to say it, but it's just like,
maybe it's like my perception of that was different. It's just, it's a hard one because like the jury, it's like, you should just be like, yep, you're right. Like, great job. But then it's like, yep, you're right. I was dooming all my allies and I was talking behind their back. And I just, it was so harsh, because the thing is, Ricard is still playing the game. He's a big game player. He only just left the game. He like hadn't made his peace with it, like by admission. And he said he like, his agenda going in was to get Erica to win. So he's like giving Erica the platform to do that herself. He's not stumping for her because she doesn't really need it. Like, he kind of knows that he can just kind of give her that voice and she'll do it. And then he's like coming hard at the others, like Xander for his Final Four decision, Deshaun for his social game. Like, he had a complete agenda. He was definitely the most, to me, the most influential juror. And like, you're fighting against someone who is basically sitting next to you, playing against you, but they're from the jury. So there's like that different power dynamic where if Erica says, well, at the merge, you said this, and this to Sean, it's kind of fair game to be like, no, I disagree, because you're opponents. But like, Ricard will be voting for you, so you want to kind of show that deference to it. But also, he's acting as if he's playing against you because he's Team Erica so, so hard. And he's using that in such an intelligent way because he can, because he's Ricard and he's smart. And you kind of, you have to defer to him, but you also want to be like, no, no. But he's an opponent to you, but he's also your juror. And I felt like Deshaun struggled with managing that relationship because Ricard made it hard on him.
I think that's one of the hardest parts that a finalist has to deal with, is that having to pay deference to a jury. It's kind of like, I can't stand this person, but I need something from them right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, Deshaun's like, okay, Ricard, well, that's a lovely thought. Now let me, you know, like, he's like, they had no love at that point. Like, Deshaun wants to be harsher than he's being with that answer, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's really hard. And like, you have to kind of like let them feel like, the thing that really annoyed me about that Shan said, and like, I'm a Shan fan.
It's a Shan stan.
Oh, sorry.
Get Shan it together,
stan.
Nick.
A stander. I still love that. That's is when she's like, oh, I would have happily came forth to you three. It's like, you can say that because you're on the jury.
Because it was never presented to you, yeah.
You know, it never presented itself to you. It's just like, if I was a finalist, I'd be like, okay, cool, yeah, you sit here. You see how the last week of the game went. And it's just like, it's so easy to judge from the jury. But that is the game. And I've been a jury member who could sit there and judge from the comfort of my little jury bench seat, not having to have made that end run and all the difficulties that are presented in that final run. So it kind of annoyed me, but in that moment, you just have to be like, of course you would have, Shan. Like, of course you wouldn't have, like, with a 1 in 4 chance of $1 million, like, snaked one of us out for, you know, like, you know, but that's why this game is so good, right? Because, like, how it's the central premise of the finale, which is, like, the power shifts from the people that you indirectly or directly had a hand in voting out, whatever that little spiel is. Like, that is such a, still fascinating after 41 seasons. I loved it.
I want to make a TikTok. I don't have TikTok, but if I did and I knew how to make TikToks, it would be like what the jury says versus what they want to say.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's such an interesting question. That's a really interesting thought. Like, in your head, they're thinking like, I hate you. Like, I'm sitting here, you're sitting there. Like, let's talk about that. Like, even like with Liana's like, so Xander, let's talk about social awareness. So my awareness is that I knew you had an idol. I'd be like, Liana, you knew that, like, I knew about the advantage and you still stole it from me. Like, the social awareness of that interaction is that I'm much more aware than you are. Are you joking? Yes. You're asking me about social awareness. Are you joking?
Yes.
You want me to give you an answer for social awareness? And then like the edit's like hamming up him stammering like the answer to that. And I felt like his answer kind of, it went a weird way where he's like, I knew to play the idol at the Tiffany vote, but then he didn't play the idol. And then he's like, no, I knew not to play it because of the chaos, which I guess makes quite a bit of sense. But I would be like, the biggest thing of social awareness is that I socially awarely knew that, like, you were trying to steal my idol and I didn't let you. Are you joking that you're bringing that to me? So, again, in the TikTok, that's probably what it is. But in Survivor, it's like, wow, Liana, what an intelligently put question. What a great socially aware read you're having on this interaction right now. Like, there's just like such a power dynamic there that it's really, really hard for the finalists to speak to. And I think it does get overlooked to a degree, especially when you have people who come in with an agenda and who are basically in ways your opponents but are not. So it's a fascinating thing.
Yeah. And the agenda is also like, I went out and, you know, this thing happened to me. It's going to be a big point in the show. I've spent a week sitting at Jury Villa pondering how that is going to, that's probably why it's called Ponderosa, right? Because you sit there and you ponder.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're saying that like it's this beautiful, brilliant thing. And that's basically a sentiment that Chris Noble had in his rap. So you've spent however much analysis to come back around to being at Chris Noble. He's like, that's why I Ponderosa. I know those lyrics off by heart. So you've got
that's so funny. Yeah, that's so funny. It just came to me then. So, like, I am the reincarnation. I am Chris Noble, but make it 2021.
You got so casual that you're like, that Chris Noble's insights are like brilliant. You're like, oh my God, Ponderosa. I don't think that's why it's called Ponderosa. But anyway.
That's funny.
I don't know.
But she's been sitting there pondering, like, oh my God, my social awareness was so off. So, okay, I've got like one last chance that I'll be on TV to rewrite this thing. It's three books. Yeah. I'll say how socially aware I was and hopefully people will believe it.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny. Like, I look at Liana and I just feel like she finds it really hard to hide the disdain that she has for Seth.
No, you've missed it as well, Nick. They're in love. Okay, Liana now has a boyfriend, but at the time I was telling you this preview, you're like, what did I miss? I'm like, oh, the whole Xander Liana being in love thing. Like, that was like a major storyline of the season. And I still think those crazy kids are going to make it. Like, I don't know what's going on with Liana and her boyfriend. I wish them the best, but if it doesn't work out, like, she has Xander's number, so.
They 100% are not going to make it. She looked like he was the younger brother, and she's just like, do you know what she looks like? He looks like her brother's friend.
That she's in love
always,
with. Yeah.
Who's always coming over and like, hi, Liana. And she's like, oh my God, this kid. Like, just like that's what it reminded me of. Like, can he just rack off?
Mrs. Liana Hastings, I'm writing it in my notebook all the time. Like, I haven't given up hope on. I want to talk about Erica's winning game because I feel like it's so important and it's been so almost annoyingly debated online. It was so far into the podcast without talking about Erica as a winner because it's such a different game to what we've seen in the US, and it's quite like it's a very nuanced game. It's quite a unique game in general. So what do you think about Erica as a winner? What are like the big pros and cons that you see of her winning game?
I really liked Erica, loved her from, you know, I just was like really rooting for her. And I think that she's so articulate. I think she's really sweet. I think that like she's someone who I am drawn to on the screen. Like I want to see more people like her from a play style, from a kind of demographic style. I thought that she has a really good eye for the game. I think she's open and honest about her flaws. Which is always, you know, you and I have spoken many, many times over the years that one of the things that I like about a survivor is someone who's willing to admit what they're not good at. And I think that the way that she spoke about how she recognized her social failings at times and spoke about how she wanted to work within her abilities, I thought that was really insightful. And it builds trust, I think, with the audience as well. I wanted to ask you because it kind of felt like that she was kind of redefining the social aspect of the game. Mm. Like, do you, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't buy it.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, right? I want to talk about my journey with Erica as a winner because I think it's so, like, I was probably middling on her through the season. I still probably see her as like a solid middle tier winner, but I think a lot of her game has been elevated for me in exits, which I'll inform you about, and through the finale. But for that one answer, I don't buy that what she was saying is the social game. I think the social game is what it sounds like. It's making relationships, awareness and things like that, which is stuff that I love seeing on Survivor. I love players that are aware. It's one of the things I value most as a viewer. To me, that's strategic. I think she's a beta strategic winner, but when Ricarda's saying, you haven't necessarily been like broadly making relationships. She definitely had some like key relationships that looked really important. Like that scene with Heather and like the bond that they clearly had and how she cultivated that. I was like, wow, like that is very social. But to call her like a broadly social player because she has awareness, I don't actually buy that. Like I don't see that as like a social tactic necessarily.
No.
Yeah. It's actually like a pet peeve I have now. Because I have so many peeves. This is actually a segment that I do in the podcast. Like, what's my new pet peeve?
That is actually a really good segment. That would be super funny. There can be a jingle.
Yeah.
And you can have a new one every week.
I basically do, Nick. At least one a week. This week for me, it's calling things that aren't the social game social. I have so many pet peeves. I could do 15 in this one podcast. But like,
do you know what you should do? Sorry, pause. You should actually do an off-season podcast where you historically go back and list your pet peeves.
Oh, I've got so many.
And then there's like a base to build from for every week. And then I just think that would be, I would love that. And you could get like guests to say, list their top three Survivor pet peeves. Oh, that would be so fun. Count me in.
I'm already, the jingle's already in my head about my list of peeves. Jacob Sager Weinstein, get on it with my peeve jingle. But I think that the social game gets like wrongly conflated with other things. Like people will be like, yes, like, it seems to usually be like a female thing, but like she was so social. And I think what they mean often is like not strategic, not for Erica, but in other ways, or like under the radar, which Erica is, yeah. But that's not necessarily social, or like not flashy. Like just if you're not flashy, you're automatically a social winner. I don't necessarily see that like that was, was Erica like so social? No, but like she's strategic. She's just not like alpha strategic. And that's still super valid. And like, that's my new pet peeve. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Bryce, itself.
Can I just quickly say one of my pet peeves with Erica?
Yes. Oh, let's do this. No. Oh, with Erica. Yes. What is it?
No, not with Erica. Okay. So do you know when she smashed the hourglass?
How could I forget?
The shot of the actual hourglass smashing was like clearly like a post-production shot that was a bit more epic. I want to see the actual smash that she did. If it is not impressive, give it to me that way. Like, I want to see that shot. They show, if you go back and see it, I'm sure, do you remember how like
they have the hammer coming down? That feels right. Yeah, yeah.
And
that's the dream team.
And it's just like, no, I want to see her smash, whether it was awkward or not, that'll add to the fun.
What you didn't see was that it took Erica like three tries to like, they sometimes do this because, you know, like Jewish weddings, you like step on the glass and like sometimes it takes the guy like three or four times. So like, so maybe that was just like,
did it actually though? Did she come out and say that?
No. I'm, wait, you, okay. So, I can't joke with you because you aren't part of the conversation. So I'm sorry. I forgot that you.
A month-long meme
no,
that
sorry,
I missed.
Sorry. No, that never happened. That one was a lie. I'm so sorry.
But now in the rest of the podcast, can you invent a fake storyline that happened in the commentary and see if you can get me to believe it? Cool.
Okay, 100%. But Nick, also, so anyway, here's another pet peeve. This is another thing I have. It's not connected to anything we're talking about. I'm just thinking about peeves I have. People are like, Ricard taking out Shan was like clearly a bad move because like he didn't win. And like, I don't know, like, that's my new pet peeve because that's, it's not like everyone who loses, like, retroactively, like, every move they made was bad. Also, like, how everyone who wins, like, retroactively, like, every move they made was good. That's not, anyway, I just wanted to talk about some things that have been irritating me on Twitter. But, okay, let's get back to Erica because she deserves it. I've been on a journey with Erica, and this stuff I can promise you is true, but I feel like the exits have been really clarifying about her game, if I can not lie to you and inform you on where I've been going with it. So
please do.
So the main issue that I had with Erica's game was that she felt, to me, it was almost irredeemable how out of the loop she seemed on Luvu, how bad her misread was of what I thought was a very key Deshaun-Sydney relationship that was portrayed to us as she goes to Deshaun, throws one of his number one allies, Sydney, under the bus, and then it's so bad that they throw a challenge to try and get rid of her, and it's only by the grace of Nafia that she doesn't go home. It was really hard for me to get past that, because then that feeds into the hourglass twist where, like, she was already in such a bad position that, like, the hourglass twist, like, outright saves her from, like, her own mistakes, and it's been really tough for me to get around that. Deshaun in Exodus has painted it as, he was trying to get out Sydney. That wasn't a misread. He wanted it first. Erica comes to him with it, and then they were kind of all in on the challenge throw other than Nasir. Erica thought Sydney would go home in that way. Sydney thought Erica would go home, and he kind of makes it seem like it wasn't 100%, but he actually says it probably would have been Sydney. So we'll talk about the edit, but like, that's not even like leaving out some of her moves. Like, that's making her look actively worse to a point where like I was really down on her game at that point. Not just kind of like being out of the loop on loop.
But hold on. Can I just, but does that then make, like, if they're going to actively make her look worse, doesn't that call into question his read of the situation and his perhaps post-viewing retrospective reimagining of her threat level to connect himself and make himself look better, that he lost to someone who was better than she actually was?
Possible, but I also think, I mean, I know that exes aren't canon, but we kind of have to take from it, but I would be interested to hear from like the rest of Luvu, but although it does seem like a very much like a primarily a Deshaun thing, but also it would make a lot of sense that he was like, I was definitely taking Erica out, and if Nasir just hadn't thrown that challenge, then she never would have been the winner. Maybe I'd been the winner, like if he hadn't stopped that challenge throw from happening. So there's probably an agenda either way of either of those narratives, but he seems pretty clear on the fact that it wasn't necessarily her. And with that storytelling a bit, that softens a lot of the flaws and the holes I had, because I think her game started, it definitely either way started off worse, and she wasn't in control on Luvu, and it probably was like the Diocese part of her game, but it built in momentum. And if that start of the game wasn't as bad as I thought, and wasn't like, as like that unforced error wasn't really as much there, then I'm like much higher on her win in her game. So I just, that's where the editor told it. I mean, I don't think the editor's like this like beacon of truth. So I think that there's something to think about with what Tashaun is saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I like that you are reframing your thinking. That's cool.
Yeah, for sure. We, we're getting that extra information. So I also thought like the finale was like the most explicit they'd been in like how she was perceived as a threat, which I thought made it seem more impressive. Also in the finale, like she makes good on being the Rickard Slayer. She put herself possibly in a more tricky situation with keeping Rickard in the game, although Xander has come out and said he used his extra vote in like a really pressuring way. She could have flipped with Heather. She could have taken out Rickard, and that's a decision that I disagreed with in not taking out Rickard as much as she had agency there. But the fact that she gives herself that pathway and then does find the advantage and then does win the challenge and takes them out, like, I thought that was a really powerful moment from her. So I think that a lot of her game has been elevated for me through the finale and through some of this additional content.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. I'm going to throw out some comparisons for you, and I want to hear what you think in terms of like winner comparisons, because I'm thinking Adam Klein. Hear me out. Also, okay, not necessarily please. A social winner. More maybe negative relationships, but then also definitely like some key relationships as Erica had. And I think it's that awareness, like that awareness being at the forefront is like Adam's biggest skill for me, and I think true of Erica as well. And for that, I would also say like Sandra and Heroes versus Villains, like all these players are like fans, super smart, not perfect games, but like really impressive players in their own right with like awareness at the forefront.
I don't know about the Sandra comparison. But can I just get back to the Adam one?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to go back to how I thought about Adam. And that aired in the interim between me having played the first time and watching it or something like that.
Yeah, it would have been about the year that you played. It would have been pretty much right after your season aired, I think.
Yeah, So Adam had messaged me, because I'm friends with Adam and we'd spoken and we've hung out and all that stuff. And he was messaging me as my season was airing, saying what was his season was coming up. That's right. Yeah. Okay. I was watching Millennials vs. Gen X. I was like, oh, there's just no way this guy's going to win.
Yeah.
I was so down on his chances. Even going into Final Tribal Council, I was like, oh, God, is this going to be a Hannah win? Like, I don't know. I think I had the complete wrong read to everyone else.
I think he was like an edgy breaker.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm going to struggle to make a comparison to Adam. Sorry, because I.
But a lot of people didn't see Eric in you, so that's actually a good comparison for most people.
Right. Okay. But isn't that interesting then that I had the inverse there?
But not as much in their stories. I just think in like skills as a player, like being really smart. Like I think that like if we talk about like the pros of Erica's game. For me, and I said this on Twitter, like it's kind of a win for the thinkers. Like even in decisions that I disagreed with, and so much of the last few weeks were about like her decision and her being a middle player and her agency, she could always like articulate every viewpoint. She was clearly like highly considered about it. And I love that. Like for me, I don't like when I feel people aren't thinking about it and just kind of like wander into things where even in decisions I disagree with, like there was intentionality, it was purposeful, it was considered. And I really appreciate that. And I can't ever say for Adam, like Adam was always thinking. Like, and the same with Sandra, like, and again, like the fact that Sandra can say, like, I don't know about that. Like, there's an awareness of game. There's an awareness of self. There's like perception being really key in that. And yeah, I just think like, it's not necessarily like dominant strategic players in like their alpha game style. They're not necessarily running the vote or being in control, but they're also highly strategic in the way they think about things and how considered their positioning is and how considered where they sit at the end is. Like, that positioning for me and how considered it is, that's where I see those ties.
I think that Sandra does it much more by gut. I don't know. I just feel like she's much more.
I could see that.
Yeah, I feel like she's much more. Mm. Yeah, it's much more instinctive. It's a bit more fast and loose. It's who she is as a person. I don't see the comparison there, to be honest. I'm warming more to the Adam one.
The Adam Erica stuff, that's very intellectual and it's very much based on like a deep understanding of the game and a love of the game. And they're both super fans and it's just very much like in their head and they're clearly like running the numbers all the time. And you can see that for both of them, I think.
I think that the comparison that jumped to my mind, and it might just be a bit too obvious, is Pia.
Yeah, I've seen that. Pia, to me, is a social player. Like, not in a way that she's not, like, not in a way that she's the absence of something else. Like, she's an actively really social player. I think Pia and Erica's games differ so vastly for me in that Erica played a very short game. She didn't even go to Tribal Council pre-merge, and, like, she didn't have as much time to impress or, like, as much to maneuver. But then she does win in a format not made to her type. Pia, in the opposite way, has, like, the longest game where she has a lot to maneuver. She kind of loses it a bit at the end where her allies get voted out, whereas, like, Erica's always on the right side of the vote and kind of, like, always in on it. But Pia is playing in a game that's more to her play style. So there's pros and cons for both there, but I just see, like, Pia playing, like, such a long game in this kind of archetype and Erica playing, like, such a short game. Pros and cons for sure, but just very different for me to kind of make sense of that. Those game styles, but in terms of as a player, Pia's obviously also very smart, very aware. I just see more of that, like, active social stuff that we're hearing Erica didn't have as much.
Cool. Yeah, I co-sign that.
Yeah. To talk more about the pros that Erica had, I feel like it's very refreshing to have, like, such an intentional middle strategy, because I do feel it was very intentional, and I feel like that's a really hard line to walk. Like, it's not so hard to push to the front, and it's easy to fall to the back, but, like, to be so consciously in the middle, I think it is really great. I think the specifically strong relationship that she had with someone like Heather and Ricard, that does speak to that social game. And just really that game sense for me, those are the highs. So I definitely see that highly, and I definitely would also back Erica, I think, in a returning season, because I think that she has those raw skills for the game. She's obviously super smart. She won a couple of challenges, was kind of always in with the challenges. And also, she'll be, like, underestimated again, I feel.
Yeah, yes. That's where the Sandra comparison really sings
that's
to me.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Did you think that her relationship with Ricard was as prominent as the finale made it out to be? Or does that something just got lost in my binge? But I was like, really? Like,
no, so I think it was prominent, but I think it was missed in the edit. And that's why I talk about, like, how dissociating it was that so much was missed in the edit. One of the major things that I think would have really bumped up her edit was if we saw how much she and Ricard were kind of running things together. I think we saw it solely as, like, Ricard getting the numbers together and him making the moves. And I do think he was at the forefront of that stuff. But had we seen a little bit more about how key that relationship had been and probably how smart and strategic they were kind of being together, which Ricard has backed up in exits and everything like that, and which he clearly felt in that final tribal council, I think that would have been really key to see for the narrative. And I think that would have really added to Erica's story.
But yeah, why wouldn't they have done that? Because then it would have been like what they tried to do between Shan and Ricard, where they were like a pair that he then took out the pair to his partner. Why did they not do that more
that
for
she
her?
Slayed him? And that's a little ruthless too. I don't know. There's so many
maybe
question marks in the
edit. Maybe that is what you were
edit.
Saying about the, like, you know, the editing of women there, that, like, well, it's easy to do it.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Is like, that to me is a big miss. Like, not seeing her and Heather form a relationship that ends up being, like, one of the most important duos in the game. Like, to talk about the commentary of, like, Erica and Heather, no one knew that they were a duo. And then around the time of, like, the Tiffany vote, I remember saying on the podcast, Erica and Heather must be a duo because Heather went to Erica first at the live tribal. Like, I have to, like, surmise that. And then only in the next episode of that double tribal council where they, like, yeah, we're a pair. It's like, okay, well, good to know, because in a month they're going to be, like, two of the final four and one's going to win. Like, that to me is, like, the biggest myth in the edit. And there's some other stuff, but that's how could you not? Like, how could you not show up like that bond?
Yeah, now that you say that about how she is, that when she, like, said, "Can I get up?" and she, like, clapped her hands and got up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I loved that from Heather. I loved that because to me that was just pure joy. Like, she was in this crazy tribal camp. She was so excited to get up and do it, and, like, that's why, like, do you know when you see people online who are like, oh, people get out of their chair too much? It's like, yes, I get all that. But, like, look how much fun they're having. Mm-hmm. There is nothing better than watching people have fun playing Survivor. It's why it's funny when Sandra's, like, burning Russell's hat. She's having fun, you know? Mm. And even in this crazy and, like, the Witch's Coven and all this kind of stuff, like, in amongst the craziness of the game that people take so seriously and gets so, like, upsetting, because trust me, I've been there, like, it gets really upsetting. Like, the fact that when people are having fun, and I don't think I'll ever forget that Heather going, great, and clapping her hands as she stood up, like, because it's like, it's so misguided, and it looked like it's a bit awkward and, like, not going to make sense, but, like, how do you stop yourself when you're playing Survivor? And what was I doing the other day? I was playing mini golf. Okay, so I took my staff out, like, the English faculty, out to mini golf at the end of the year as a celebration. And we were playing little putt-putt at Holy Moly in the city. Mm-hmm. And you can play normal, but I was like, someone like made a bet, like, I wonder if we can kind of chip it over the barrier that it's not supposed to go. And I was like,
they hate you so much for that. Holy
moly. Yeah. No, not like in a destructive way. It's like there's a shortcut where if you can get it over and down this tiny tube, you get a hole in one, or you can go the other way. And like, she was like, I bet you can't do that. I bet you, like, you're not gonna be able to do that. And I was like, oh, I'm so close to winning, like, with my score so far. Nah, stuff it. Who cares? This is fun. And I just like chipped it and clearly did not get it, right? And like got like 7 for that hole. But it was fun. And like, I couldn't help myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this girl's a Survivor fan. And she said, I just got a window into why you have never won Survivor. And I'm like, yes, yes.
And you fired her? You're like, get out.
I was like, you actually understand my personality. It's fun. You're supposed to revel in these moments. And I love that Heather did that. And I know we're supposed to be talking about Erica, but I just wanted to give Heather that moment. Everyone should appreciate the clap. The Heather clap.
The clap. Were you having a lot of fun in 2016? Was that like, was that a good time?
Well, no. Okay. But that, you know, going for the idol clue, like I could have just not gone for it, or I could have just taken it and I was like, no, let's invent a poem, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Is like, it's thrilling to me, like, you know, like I just love that kind of stuff, and that's what I love watching in people who play Survivor.
Well, that's what we can talk about with Xander, like, in terms of like ticking the bucket list, like he really did, and maybe that's why we'll talk about like the fire decision, and if he was really having fun, like maybe he'd want to make fire, so we'll talk about that decision. But I guess we should get into the edit, because as we're saying, like, you're saying, like, where's that Rukayasa coming from? And that's not you missing out on the conversation. Like, we did not see that.
Sure,
we didn't hear about that. That wasn't a part of it for me until the finale. So that's a really big omission for me. And it's hard for me as well, because, like, I look at the cons of Erica's game, and a lot of them are, like, being redefined for me now, because the Luvu stuff, as I said, the Hourglass stuff, like, how much is that on her? How much is that being misrepresented to us? It's a really tough one. And then, like, decisions that I disagreed with her down the stretch, because you weren't part of it, but I like disagreed with, like, at the final 7, for example, even like early merge, and like she could flip, and I still probably do disagree with it. I think like she gave herself possibly something of a narrow path, and like had to take out Ricard, and like had to execute, and did execute on like somewhat of a difficult path. But for me, a lot of it was based on like this perception of her is not necessarily going to get that jury kudos, and maybe that's on me for being a pessimist and not thinking that a modern US Survivor jury is going to really value that type of game. Or maybe that is on the edit as well, but other than I think Shan a couple of times as the protagonist telling us Erica was a threat, I don't really feel like I got that perception. So I'm really trying to like reconcile how I viewed the whole season without, you know, fully rewatching it, and like Erica's game within that, and like all the parts of that. So we'll talk about the edit now, but yeah, for me, I've been like going on a journey with it over the last like 2 to 3 days.
Sure. Mm. I've already said kind of, like, that's kind of hard for me, because I felt like it was even. So I don't know what else.
I wish I had viewed the season though. I couldn't really do it. I mean, she wasn't in control. Obviously, she's not like this dominant person through a lot of the game. But then at the end, she's pitching like how intentional she, you know, how she didn't need to be that, and how intentional that was. So like, something that could have been viewed as a flaw, because she doesn't have as much of that agency. If she has agency and not having agency, if that makes sense, like that as well speaks to something quite positive. So it's interesting, like how you can kind of flip that perception.
Definitely. I thought that like Xander got a lot of positive content.
Yeah.
Which made me think like, are we setting him up for a bit of a win? But like, I just could never reconcile that he could be a viable winner choice from the, you know, post-merge, like the couple of episodes after the post-merge. It just never felt like it could come together unless something like amazingly, like mind-blowingly, you know, poverty levels happened. So I feel like, but I felt like the edit was always setting us up for Xander being at the end.
Mm.
I don't know, did you feel that? Like, I felt like he was always going to be there.
Through the early merge, I don't think so. I thought at a point he'd like use his idol and then go home. But then like, yeah, at a point, because that was like the journey I was going on with it, was a lot like, oh, Xander didn't use his idol, good for you. And then like, why are they not talking about Xander? And Jason and I both had like a bit of like a glass shattering moment last week. We were like, oh, I don't think that they like, obviously Danny said it, but we're like, clearly Like Xander's chances are quite different, and you really can't like even blame the casuals for being mad, I think, at like being confused about Xander's lack of votes, because I don't think that story was hugely given to us at all before the finale.
Do you think he deserved zero votes?
No, no one ever does. That's like another hot take I have. Unless they're like the worst person on earth, I hope no one ever gets zero votes ever. It breaks my heart. We don't need it. I don't need someone to win 7-1. I'm an empathetic person, and I don't like when someone doesn't get votes. You all were out there. You all tried hard. I wish that all of you get 1 to 2 votes, and the same person wins, and then let them take their $1 million. It doesn't take away from the money, but I hate when people get zero votes. I really, really want them to be validated and to just like have that for themselves.
Yeah, agreed.
Poor Xander. Okay, well, the edit. So, as you said, Luvu stuff actively negative, Heather relationship not shown. I felt like the perception of her was a little bit confusing, but maybe that's on me. I felt like there was also a lot of, like, tell and don't show. Like, if you saw Erica as a threat, it was a lot of, like, Shan saying it or, like, it being said, especially towards the end, like, being the finale. But I felt like it wasn't necessarily, like, shown to us as much in what she was doing. Like, she says in her Day 26 package and in some interviews that she was, like, a big part of, like, bringing the Underdog Alliance together. I feel like we didn't see that as much, and it was, like, more completely given to Rickard. So these are things, like, I think if you, like, put in that Rickard content, you put in that Heather content, that makes a world of difference to me in investing in her story. And they did give her quite a bit at the end. Like, they really went on about that split vote. Like, they gave her a lot on that in the Shad vote that I always thought was a little overblown. So they were trying towards the end, but I still think that if you just give, like, that additional content, I know in the pre-mode, like, she's the only one who doesn't go to, like, she and Heather are the only two people in the whole game who don't go to tribal, don't find an idol, and don't go to an external island. So it's a hard thing to do without, like, shoving it down the audience's throats, but there's more that could have been done there, and probably the Heather relationship is, like, the biggest omission.
But, okay, what are we wanting, though, from this?
Yeah.
Like, what is the goal? Like, do you want us to see, do we want it to be obvious that they're the winner? Or, because
Yeah.
Like, is it that we're saying, I need to know why she won, but then it becomes too obvious, like a Shan thing, because I already felt like it was obvious. And again, as we've said, I'm the minority there. But I think that what it fits into is we're not talking about the winner edit. We're talking about the edit in general, right? Like, you're saying, like, everyone should get all of this content.
No, I'm talking about the winner edit. But I hear your point, which is, are you saying it has to be telegraphed to us where some of the audience already saw it? Some didn't, so you're either going to make everyone see it, and then some people see it too much, like what they did with Michelle Fitzgerald, which was too much. To that, I say, I like when a winner can sneak up on us. I like being wrong, but we can't afford that right now. And for that, I say, she's the first female winner in 7 seasons.
Sure. Yes.
The statistics of Rob's Fact Checker has amazing statistics online. I encourage everyone to go on Twitter and see that. Just amazing statistics. I mean, terrible, but, like, the research done that, like, male winners are extremely over-edited and female winners are extremely under-edited.
Yeah.
And I want to live in a world where when it's narratively sound and when it makes sense, like, obviously the holes I've given in terms of Heather and stuff, like, definitely do better there. But, like, narratively, yeah. Oh, this female winner snuck up on us. Oh, this male winner snuck up on us. But you know what? There's a fairly even game where kind of anyone can and does win, and we're at liberty to have dominant showings of wins and under the radar showings of win, and the narrative can be a bit different. With US Survivor, we aren't in that place. And it has been insulting that I said last week, I'm like, I kind of feel like Erica's going to win because why are all the contenders flawed? The winner is going to be flawed. That's not usually how modern US Survivor is. It must be Erica because one of these things is not like the other. And that was like the biggest thing for me. So how come they're so okay with, like, when it's a male winner, for it to be shoved down our throats, for it to be so obvious, where you're like, well, this person is not in on the numbers, like a better example, but they're definitely going to win. And that's clear and fine. But now they're going to be tricky and cute and try to make it like it snuck up on us. It's like, but can you do it for, like, one of the men? You know, you never did that, but, like, you did it
exactly
for the one woman. Like, we're not in that position where you can actually do that, even though I enjoy it as a narrative style if done well.
So their rebuttal right now would probably be, well, we're trying to make it not as obvious because it's a new era of Survivor and we're going to try and edit it differently.
Yeah.
And I did feel like it was edited differently, right?
Mm.
But what the counter and the correct argument you're saying is not right now.
We're not in that place yet. I want to be there in 10 seasons. I want 5 and 5 in the next 10 seasons and then edit them however you want. Like, basically how old school Survivor used to be. I think it was like 6 and 6 in the first 12 seasons. Yeah, let's have Some, you know, women edited dominant or under the radar, and some men edited dominant under the radar. Whatever works for the story, show it. It doesn't need to be the winner's story. And I don't think this needed to be the winner's story, but I think more could have been added. It just is very fishy and a little bit insulting that this is the one where it's like, oh, we really saw you, not only for all your flaws, but also some like possibly manufactured flaws. Like, why for you? I think they needed to maybe read the room about what people would have wanted out of like the first female winner in 7 seasons.
Do you mind sharing some of those stats that you were talking about?
Yeah, so I highly encourage everyone to go to @RobFactChecker on Twitter. He has Instagram, I think, that is Survivor Fact Checker. It's based on Bachelor Data, which is another account that I absolutely love, just with these incredible statistics, and he's put it out there. So he's got the Survivor winner confessional stats. Erica is the 34th out of 41 winning games, most edited winner. She's below Chris Underwood. So
when you say most edited, you mean like least amount of confessionals?
Or yeah, so it's on confessionals because that's like the easiest way to do
statistics. Okay,
So he has those like he has over under edited in terms of like compared to like the rest of like however many other confessionals in the season. So she's negative 13.3% edited. So I'll give you the top 10 of edited players, of edited winners. Rob Mariano.
Well, can I try guess?
Okay, yeah. What was Rob? Okay, sorry. Continue on. Give me 2 and 3.
So this is the people who've had the most obvious wins.
Yeah, the most visible wins.
Okay, Tony.
Tony, yeah, is number 2.
I'm not going to say Tony again. I'm going to say, well, if I say Parvati, it kind of defeats the purpose of why it's so damning. So it's not going to be a woman.
Here's a fun thing about Parvati. Parvati is 1 under Erica. She's the 35th most edited winner. Parvati didn't get a lot of confessionals, which is shocking.
I was thinking of Parvati in Heroes Village.
But no, but that has been shocking to me. I guess like the visibility of Parvati maybe wasn't as individual as people remember. That's a crazy one. But can I just say, you have got it though. Like the number 3.
Oh, Tony.
Yeah, it's Tony again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never would have thought that he got that much in Winners at War compared with so many other screen time hogs.
Winners at War was 2nd because he had that like also that big episode which was like the most confessionals like in a single episode.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a fun guess. What do you think the first woman is? What number? And who?
Oh, okay, cool. All right. What number? Oh, like 13?
Very close, 12th. The first 11 over-edited players, winners, are men. Like, don't you think that these are stats that the editors maybe should have looked at before they try to be a little cute with the edit? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Can I try to guess the first woman?
Yeah.
I want to say it's Kim, but like,
stop doubting yourself. Yes, it's Kim. I want to say this every time you've been right, so just like go with your gut. Be Sandra in that way. And then the next is Sarah, 16th. So, yeah, top 11 are men. Of the under-edited players, you can probably guess the least edited winner.
Danny?
No, Danny actually has slightly more than Erica. It's Natalie White, then Bob, the Sepia, Sandra and Heroes vs. Villains, Sophie, Denise, Parvati, Erica, this is me building up, Danny, and then Chris Underwood. Chris Underwood is the 2nd most underrated man, and there are so many women below him. So, yeah. It's a problem. Stats are there.
Who was at the bottom? There's one name there that really shocked me. What was the bottom one?
Natalie White.
That shocks me.
Well, she had 19 confessionals. That's like a famous thing.
I know, but that shocks me because like,
she's minus 56.9% edited, and the next is Bob at 25.
Such a hog. He was such a hog.
Yeah.
Just because she went to so many tribal councils.
She went next to Russell to the tribal councils. Like, she's literally double as much under-edited as the next person. So, but beautiful stats, incredibly color-coded. Rob's Fact Checker is just like doing amazing things online, and like highly recommend everyone check that out. On Instagram, it's Survivor Fact Checker. Incredible graphs, beautiful stuff, just couldn't recommend it more. But this is what I'm saying is that the stats are too damning for this to have tried to be cute, and the flaws, but like I think they were trying to rely a lot on like the lamb to lion narrative, and like that was doing a lot of the heavy lifting, and they wanted like the hourglass to like really delineate her journey, but like also the hourglass thing was like so derided by fans that maybe that like undercut a little bit of the impact of that. And that, again, in a world where that's done slightly better and women have had an even run at it, and in terms of editing and winning, both of those things need to elevate, then sure, be fun with it in the 50s when Survivor's in a better state of gender. But right now, we couldn't afford to, and you know what? You could have given her more. And for them to, like, possibly really be showing the Luvu stuff as, like, egregiously bad compared to what it was, if that is true, I have a real big problem with that, because that is not how men with a much more flawed game have been shown to us as winners. So that's a problem. Right. That's a problem for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on all this.
Yeah. So that's been an interesting thing, and that's the kind of the conversation that you've been missing about that. I want to talk about, though, two things that I feel are externally to that and kind of within that progress after I've just, like, spent a long time complaining about it. The new pet peeve was the edit of women. Here's a pro for me. They talk about how in Survivor, with the edit, when a woman wins, it's often about a man losing, and when a man wins, it's about the man winning. And I think with the stats, it'd probably be hard to argue that. But in this one season, I do think that the story for me was about Shan losing. And she's a woman. And, like, that actually is progress to me, because at least, like, she got to be, like, the big mafia boss, the protagonist. And this was, like, her story and everything else, as I said, has kind of been the epilogue to that. And her exit, which was such an incredible episode, like, culminated the whole narrative. But the fact that it was a big, like, big character and such a strong woman losing, even though they could have done more with Erica, like, there's progress in that for me.
That's a really, really insightful point. I really like that. I even like that kind of, I've never heard that phrase before about, did you come up with that about if a woman wins, it's about a man losing?
Generally.
That's a really interesting way to think about it. And it's very true. And I guess I always try and think, like, you know, it's clear that Jeff is tapped into the criticism because he's like, I hear you.
Oh, we've had this argument before. I just had such a strong sense of deja vu. We've had this argument before. You feel like Jeff is tapped in and I don't feel that. So I'm not going to argue it again.
Oh, yeah, we have had this.
I know.
Hold on a second.
You know, you've been podcasting together too much when you, like, go around and have the same conversation.
But hold on. We clearly had that conversation before season 41. He said, how many times did he say, like, we heard you. We're going to do it anyway.
He also said, I'm not reading your tweets.
But by saying that, he's aware that the tweets exist and, like, what they're
so
actually about.
So aware, Nick. Look alive. Come on, Nick. He doesn't, like, no way. Like, if you read all of his interviews about the twist, he's like, yeah, there's a lot of conversation about it. Like, I just don't believe that he's tapped into what we're saying. I really don't.
He is.
He's not looking at Rob's fact check on Twitter. He doesn't know.
Well,
these
he should,
stats.
Because those graphs are amazing.
Beautiful, right? Just incredibly well done.
Beautiful.
Couldn't recommend it highly enough. Yeah.
Anyway, and I just think basically that he is tapped in, and his argument will be to all the naysayers that, like, oh, you and the editor, he'll be like, but Shan was the main character. So, like, I always try and think about it from, like, you know, what would the show say back? Because I know people who work on Survivor, right? Both some American ones, but, you know, all the Australian people, they are aware of what people are saying. Now, whether they decide to do anything with that or not is another issue. But I know that they are aware. And I think that he would be ready to say, look, we'll give you Shan, but we won't give you Erica for some unknown reason.
Well, the way that I would choose to edit the season would be a Shan season. I believe it was Shan season. I think that that's narratively true, and I don't want them to be non-transparent about what that is. And I think it's a really engaging storyline, and Shan is an incredible character. I just wish that we were in a position where that wouldn't be so offensive because, A, from a game and edit perspective, like, female winners have just been so hard done by in, like, every sense. I wish that could kind of stand on its own and be true of the season without it needing to represent more. And I think that more could have been done for Erica without taking away from the fact that it was truly Shan's narrative.
Sure.
And
sure.
I will say as well, like, externally to that, for me as an analyst, I'm very, very happy that we've had three female winners this year because existing in International Survivor as I do, I can analyze a more even game in terms of results. And that is great for me. Like, I love that Erica doesn't have to hold up female success in Survivor globally. She's the third female winner this year. So for me, I want to be able to analyze these players as players. And I feel like that's especially, like, Haley and Erica, like, who are, like, such big fans of the show and strategists in their own right. Like, that's how I hope they'd want to be analyzed. Like, not necessarily as, like, just as, like, the woman winner, just as, like, that's what she represents, just as, like, having to hold up this, like, really important thing on their own back. And the fact that they all have won means, for me, I really enjoy it. I'm so happy that I can be, like, here's the game analysis. Like, I can put all three winners at, like, very different parts of the winner ranking spectrum for myself, and they all played such different games, and I look at them in all different ways, and I don't have to be, like, this is them, like, representing the cause. Like, in Global Survivor, they don't, which is amazing, and then I can look at it in a game level, and that's what they deserve. Like, that's how we look at men. And I love that I can do that, and I've been able to analyze the different games for what they are. So that, for me, is, like, a joy external to what US Survivor is doing.
It's kind of like, and I'll put it in, like, terms of Real Housewives, because everyone knows I'm a Real Housewives fan. is that there was after 13 seasons, they finally had a black woman on the Real Housewives of New York,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's like, you know, talking all this discussion around, oh, like, you know, she's, you know, like what her effect was, positive or negative. It's like, but when you can step out of it and realize that there's all these other black housewives mm-hmm. that are doing, you know, all these other things, it's kind of like it takes the onus off that pressure of that one person to be kind of fighting the cause in this kind of mm-hmm. genre. It's just like, no, let's get the big picture here.
Yeah. And Eric even spoke about in exits, like how much pressure she felt to like finally give people a woman winner and to be that person and not to be like another zero vote finalist. And she was going up against two men, and US Survivor, that is true of her. And a lot of it is around what it represents, but her being the third female winner that I've spoken about this year, I love that. I'm like, let me talk about the pros and cons. And even though, yes, we talk about it from a gender perspective in the context of US Survivor and in the edit and that stuff is really important, when I'm just talking pure game, like I can look at them all as like players, and that is completely what they deserve. And I'm really, really glad that that's where International Survivor sits. So, like, great year in terms of that.
Totally. It's kind of like what you're saying about, like, you know, not right now. Like, we need to do this, you know, because it's the first one. But it's like, well, globally, it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't have to come on and be like, this is all that Erica represents, because it's not true. And she deserves more than that in analyzing her game. So very, very happy we could do that on Global. I was also thinking, imagine if you're Erica and the votes aren't read on the island and you come back and you're getting, like, because it was mainly the early game. She got like four confessionals in the pre-merge. Like, you can compare it to Deshaun, who was getting like, he had like, you would think you lost, but she knows she's won. She was like, she said in exit, like, she was a little confused.
That is like, I want to talk about that and the revealing of the votes, but with and said that, I guess.
Yes, we will talk about the reunion. Let's go through some of these other moments from the finale. Xander taking Erica with him through to the final three and not making fire. Where did you sit with this decision? Because this has been highly debated.
I don't blame him. I really don't blame him, because, like, I'm sure, like, you know, he seems like he's pretty tapped into Survivor. The conventional wisdom for the last few seasons has been you don't let that person fight in fire, because the person who goes with you is always the GOAT. Don't let them do it. Don't let them have that moment. Let them be kind of diminish their threat level. And he did that, and then it's like, oh, yeah, but we're not worried about that anymore. What we're worried about, and it's like, ah, like the game has moved on beyond him. But, like, how is he to know that for the last three or four seasons? That's what people have been speaking about, right?
I think the conversation has become about you have to make fire. I think since Chris Underwood did it, and then it retconned Dom's decision as bad, which I disagree with still to this day. I was listening to Dom and Rob last week, and Dom was like, so I'm like, no, you're fine. It still kills me. Like, I just really wish him peace. But then, like, Natalie doesn't do it and doesn't take out Tony off her own back. And, like, that is seen as negative. I know that it seems so backwards because he's won immunity, and that should be, like, his right to be immune and not have to give it up and not have, like, the optimal move be to, like, give up your safety that you've earned. And definitely, like, this really strange mechanic. Like, it does give some, like, off-balance decisions here. But I do think, like, I was screaming at the TV, like, give up the necklace for a few reasons. Being that, okay, well, glass half full, like, yes, you have these, like, limited decisions that seem unfair. But, like, glass half full, you do have an opportunity. Like, if you're Ricard, if you're Tony, if you're at the front, you've earned the right to just sit back, take the break, and send other people to fire. And you know that if you get to, you've gotten to the end and you'll win. But if Xander's perception of himself was correct, he should have known that he needed more, that he needed, A, to take out Erica, who was the biggest threat. That was a really misperception. He needed to show that correct perception as well, that he, in this alpha game style, which has all been about risk-taking all season, he could really, like, back that again and just show that he, like, doesn't need handouts and he can do everything himself, and that you take the moment away from someone else making fire in front of the jury when you've won a challenge, which is unfairly not in front of the jury. You're carrying someone through, but you're carrying two people through. You really, like, kind of nullify their influence in that way, and you have the big moment. And I know that it seems unfair, but I just feel like, but basically how drawing dead he was at that point, I don't think he could have won, but I think he probably would have got maybe some votes, maybe would have come second to Deshaun. And I think there was something there. And I think when, if his perception had known kind of how out of it he was, and I think the problem on perception was that he didn't know, but had he known that, I think he should have taken that opportunity. He seemed great at fire. Had he even lost, it didn't matter because he couldn't win the game. So who cares if you sit fourth or third? And I just kind of wish that he had made that ballsy move, because it would have fit so well as well into his play style, which has really, really been in this way.
No, oh, it's such a, like, it's so, it sucks though.
It's,
like,
so unfair. I completely agree, but it's the moment.
Move is, Does that mean the movies that you don't compete in the final four challenge?
The final four challenge is not a great thing to win because you get the opportunity, and I think that's more positive than people are making it out to be. But you can also, you're also the only person making a decision at the final four, and if it's a bad decision, they will look poorly on it.
You
can
criticize.
Well, they did, and that was like the main thing, and it kind of reminds me of John winning the challenge to send out a jury member. Now you've won something, you've earned something, but you've also given yourself a test in front of the jury. And she takes Verna out of the jury, and that was a bad read on the jury. She's the only one who gave herself the chance to read the jury in that way. The others don't have to, you know, show that perception to the jury and don't have to be judged positively or negatively on that. And she's judged negatively on it. So it really reminds me of that, of like taking out a juror where you have to say like, how good is your read? But you're the only one who has that test, and you've earned the right for that test. But if you fail in that test, it's like, it wasn't a great thing to win, was it?
That's a really good comparison.
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a really, really hard one, but I would have liked it for him. Like, Erica's the kind of player who's done like the subtle social strategy. She can kind of be brought through, and no one sees that as like taking away from her game. But like Xander, who really has been in like this alpha seat, it showed poor perception. And I think had his perception... No, like, had he seen how out of it he was, I think possibly he would have been like, let me just, like, maximize my chances. Let me just look as good as possible. And, like, he was making great fire. Like, let me just beast out, because that's the one thing that I can really claim. And that's, like, a strong narrative to give to the jury at the end of this. And it would really, like, really cap that all off.
But what are the stats, though, on, like, the person who's brought, like, you have to refresh me, on the last, what, five or so seasons? What is the stats? The person who's brought... always loses, right?
Well, Tommy won, so that's how I felt that Erica that opened the door for
something.
Did he
get brought?
He got brought, and Erica got brought. Sarah won fire and lost. Dean won fire and lost. Ben won fire and won. Wendell won fire and won. Chris Underwood won fire and won. I think that the narrative is basically saying at this point, like, you have to, like, Not you have to. See how much you have to lose. This is my thing. Like, Dom had a lot to lose. He had five jury votes. He was close. Okay, back yourself in that way. But if you don't have a lot to lose because it's not looking great for you, then who cares if you lose fire, you know? Then take that risk and then try and maximize in that way. And I think that's what, like, Chris Underwood thought to do. And that's how we talked about last season, that Natalie saw, like, Chris Underwood came back and was like, what do I have to lose? I've been out of the game for most of it. I'll just do this. Natalie saw, like, I've been out of the game. That's scary. I'm going to play more conservatively. And she was criticized for that decision. So it's about looking at your game and how much you think you have to lose. And if you think that basically you're not in the best position with it, Natalie possibly could have beat Sarah. So to me, it's also a bit of a different decision. But you have to look at, like, your opponents and how much the jury is looking for more from you if you haven't done enough, and just weigh it up. But it's a very legitimate query, and it's definitely a legitimate move to make.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah.
It's a big one. And I kind of, again, you know, I said I'm sliding to the casual side.
Mm-hmm.
I do, as much as I do enjoy a final three vote, you know, a final three challenge.
Don't say it.
I'm going to say it.
Don't say it.
And I knew, but while I was watching it, I was
off
like,
the podcast as fast as you kick that co-worker out, holy moly. You're not.
I was like, Shannon's going to hate me saying this, but like, I don't mind. Like, it's giving us new stuff to talk about. And I think it's fine because International Survivor lets us scratch the other itch. If it was that for everyone, or we only had this, I wouldn't like it. But it's kind of like that weird cousin that you get to see just at Christmas time, you know?
Weird cousin.
If it upsets me, or I can then just retreat from them and go back to my real family, which is Australian Survivor.
That's how your Survivor feels all the time. It's like, you've upset me, and I'm going back to Survivor South Africa, and LaRue's just, like, giving me a hug.
Yes.
You're not my real family, US Survivor. US 12.
You're not
making.
My real family.
Rob tweeted about how fire making has been so exciting in three of the last four seasons. Tony and Sarah, massive moment. This was really exciting, obviously. Chris Underwood, like, the biggest moment of that finale, probably. So... I can't agree. I'm so sorry. Like, the way that it just breaks the formula for me, I'll never enjoy it.
I think, and you're not going to agree with me, but I think there's a part of you who has gotten used to it and doesn't mind it, but you're too far in.
It's my still pet peeve. Nope. I walk things back all the time. I'm walking back all the Erica stuff. The fire stuff, it was an exciting moment, but no opportunity for 2-1-1s. It was the least interesting final four that we had in this year. It was the only, we actually didn't have like any normal final four vote. How fun is that? We had 2 2-1-1s and fire. But if it's a normal final four vote, every so often you will get fire and it will be fun and exciting and organic. And sometimes you'll get 2-1-1s and sometimes you'll just get regular votes. And like, that's the game. I'll never, ever in 100 million years go for competition over a vote? I'll never. I love the vote, Nick. I've spoken about it at length this year. It's like probably the thing I've spoken about most. Let people vote people out in Survivor.
Okay. Well,
like, I still think you don't. This is like me and Liana and Xander. I'm like, I still think you love each other. Yeah.
I just think that you can soften on it, slash you have secretly softened on it because there are other versions.
Me anyway. Softening on things? Have you? Are you? What are we doing? Do you know me? Like, is that me? Tempered
next
me.
Question. Okay. Next question
is, what about the idea of him playing the idol for a card? He has said in exits, like, what if I play the idol for a card? Because then I showed, like, I was more selfless and it's maybe, like, a big move for the jury, but then I take him out in fire. Thoughts?
Okay, my thoughts on the whole thing of him playing it for Ricard is that if he has that thought, do not verbalize it to Ricard.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you've got a long drive to tribal council. You've got all the waiting around beforehand, which we don't see when we watch the show. There's hours where you are going to stew and back, forth, flip, flop, flip, flop, flip, flop. To say you're going to do it and then not do it is sending him to Jury Villa so pissed that you dangled a life.
But it's again that heart that he has. Like, it's that genuine heart that people didn't believe, but this is such proof that that's how just like, that he just felt it in the moment, so he said it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that is the move there, right? The move is to think it, say it to the producers in your interview, mull over it, and then if you do decide to do it, think of how grateful he will be if at the absolute last second, you pluck him from death's door and you don't give him time to build up some sort of counter against you where you could potentially become the next Eric Reichenbach. Mm. Like, it's just – I really love that he had the thought. I love it. It shows that Xander has got, you know, an interesting head on his shoulders. Mm. It's like, that makes good TV. But again, I just feel like he could have done that in a better way. Where, like, I think that Ricard was pissed.
Yeah.
I think that Ricard was pissed. And, like, maybe he is that great of friends with Erica. We never saw it. Or maybe he was just really pissed at the person who was actually his friend. So he decided to go all in on Erica.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the way that Xander does think about things differently is another thing I think that's really refreshing of his archetype, and that's something I talked about earlier, where he didn't just, like, put the foot on the gas. He was doing things like giving up immunity when he was in that underdog position, and this is the kind of thing as well where he's thinking outside the box, also with fire. Like, he's verbalizing all of these pathways, even if he doesn't go with them, which I think is really refreshing for his character. I would say as well, in terms of not telling Ricard, agree with what you're saying. Second point to that, if you do decide to do it, you're going to be fighting for that to look like your move, whether Ricard knows or not, because he's so much more the dominant player, and that's the perception that people are probably going to say, even if he doesn't know about it, they're probably going to say, well, that's like Ricard's great social game, rather than, you know, like, if you're Jeremy doing it to Steven, you're the dominant player, that's on you. But if you do it for someone who's more dominant than you, you're fighting for that perception. Worse even if he knows, because then it's like, clearly Ricard manipulated the situation, like, he's the puppeteer and you're the puppet. So in terms of hurting his feelings, and also in terms of, like, the agency of it being, like, your move versus his, and you'd be doing it fully for, like, jury credit. Like, I don't even think you'd get that jury credit. So there's, like, really nothing there for me, but I agree. Yeah, telling Ricard doesn't really feel like he got anything out of that other than the fact that it's just, like, his pure heart doing that.
Someone like Ricard will pounce on that and be like, look how great I was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even have to do anything. People give me idols.
Exactly.
Like,
as well, because, like, Xander, like, used his extra vote for Ricard, and, like, you can look at that, like, Xander's move, or you can say, like, wow, how, like, a lot of people did, how great is Ricard that, like, Xander didn't use his extra vote for anyone until Ricard. So yeah, I think that Ricard would have owned that. Some really interesting stuff as well with, like, Xander and Ricard's relationship. I love that moment about Ricard telling him about how he had a son that was due. Just, like, a beautiful friendship, really, and then something we hadn't seen until more recently, kind of, like, gives new light to, like, Ricard telling Xander to play his idol at the Tiffany vote, which we all saw as a bluff, and now I don't actually think was, and Xander says he was reading the chaos instead. But, like, that was really, like, an undersold romance that I ended up really enjoying because they were two of my favorite characters.
Yeah. I really liked Ricard, that moment, that, again, I keep going back to how sweet Xander is. His face was so genuine.
It's a meme now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, no, that's actually true.
No, you're lying. That's
No. It's all, I haven't told a lie yet. I'm not like making up lies on the podcast. Like, I have enough to think about without like trolling you. Like, there's a meme, because Xander was like really like ugly crying, and there's just like a really funny meme. I'll send it to you after the podcast.
Oh, that's so, I mean, that was such a nice moment. His reaction to that
It is a funny look on his face, though. It's hard not to memeify it.
That reaction to when he found out was so genuine, and just like, yeah, I got a real soft spot for him.
There's like a moment in the middle of the episode where Xander slaps himself, and I tweeted that like we're not talking enough about it. He's like, I don't know what to do with Erica, and he like slaps himself in the face.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about it. I love Xander. I think that he is, you know, destined to play many times.
Was Ricard telling that? What it seemed like to me is that he's kept this secret the whole time to pull out at jury mm-hmm. at final tribal council,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah,
I was going to do the same. Yeah, you know, that's. Even though it wasn't true,
you were gonna in what season? You were gonna in All Stars.
In All Stars,
yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they would. Well, you did end up having a second kid. Like maybe they just would have thought Christine had like a really, really long pregnancy.
Yeah,
better go back and get have that kid. Like,
yeah,
told them better make good on that.
I think that he planned to keep it a secret. I think it was a fait accompli. I think everyone told him on the beach completely that he was definitely going home. And the only card he had left was to release that information.
The only Ricard. How dare you? You've really been out of the game, Nick.
Sorry?
The only Ricard. You said card. The only card he had to play. His name is Ricard.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. But do you think that that was like him playing a card there?
A Ricard. Nick.
I know. We've moved past the pun.
You never move past the pun. I'm starting to feel like you don't remember who I am. I think that he knew it was done.
And do you think that he said that as a way to kind of try and get something going? Because he's very busy.
He was desperate, and he basically 99.9%. Like, he attended his own funeral at that tribal council.
I've been there.
Jeff was, like, talking in past tense, like, what has this experience been? It's like, he's still in the game, Jeff. Like, it was his own funeral, you know?
I've been to two of those. They are not fun. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering as to whether you thought that he was actually weaponizing that, or he was just kind of like, yeah, I'm toast.
I don't think Ricard does anything without weaponizing it. I think that that was his agenda, but I also think he knew it wasn't a risk because it was the only thing that could even less than a percentage chance save him. And if it didn't happen, like he's not going to be at Final Tribal Council to have the moment anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well. Yeah, let's talk about some of these other players. We've spoken about how much we love Xander. Ricard, for me, just like really a favorite. Just so fun, so bold, so strategic, had the personal story, really spoke to representation in several different ways. I just think like, yeah, just like really a favorite for me, probably.
Do you think he is one of the greats though? Like he even said that, like someone said that, whether it was him or Jeff or something like that. Like,
at his funeral. He always looked at the dead with rose-colored glasses though. Like he was dying.
No, I think it was in the reunion.
No, it was probably at both. Because he definitely, at the Tribal Council funeral, that's when Jeff said some of the best players will never win. He wasn't out of the game yet, though. So they definitely were talking about it in the game. I think it was softening the blow. I think he is, you know, we'll get to the chizzy, but like, you know, the best player of the season. But I think it's really hard to be a great after one season compared to, you know, the pantheon that we have. You know, maybe he'll come back and be a great, but like, pretty tough to do. As a fifth placer on one season.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where I sit with it. Are you a Ricard fan?
Definitely. Yeah. I tweeted out because I did like a kind of like a tweet thread of like, here are my stone cold takes from weeks ago as I plow through my binge. And it was that I wasn't really like I wasn't rooting for him, like, which is odd because there was something about him that didn't just quite gel with me in the fact that I really loved everything he was doing. I think he's excellent. I love what he brings to the show. I even love his look is different to everyone with the gray long hair and all that kind of stuff. Like everything was great, but I still found myself rooting for Erica and Xander.
Mm.
Isn't that
weird?
I was
rooting for him because he was the best strategically. So that's usually, but I really did enjoy Ricard. And I thought that Shan move was just the move of the season. It was so epic. The stuff he was doing with the extra vote with Nasir, so cool. Like anyone who can give me that strategic content where I'm like, I want to come in and explain how innovative this is and just like why it got me. Like that, I love that. And I think he was so much more than obviously just being like a game bot. Like he wasn't even in the stratosphere of game bot. He had way more than that. But he also had that little bit of the Game Boss. And I love that, as you know. So I really enjoyed it. Deshaun, I think we maybe have like slightly different opinions on. I know that you weren't as big a fan. I really enjoyed Deshaun, though, on the season.
I think it was what he brought was great, but I felt like he felt like the way that he was behaving felt like he wasn't a fan of the show, and I'm sure he is. I don't have any. It felt like he wasn't. It felt like he was very much in his own head about the experience. And one of my pet peeves as a player twice is people playing the game in a way that doesn't recognize that everyone else is having the same experience.
That's you, pet peeve. You know about the jingle. I just
I felt like I felt like he was like his viewpoint was like, but why are you doing that? Like, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, like, oh, this is my experience kind of thing. And I felt like he couldn't step out of himself for the other players. I think he was very much thinking about it for the viewers at home and the culture and all that. But I'm talking about, like, you know, to me, he exemplified the idea that, like, everyone is the protagonist of the story. Everyone thinks that they're the protagonist of the story. And I felt, and I'm probably wrong, and I'm sure he's a lovely guy and all this stuff, but I felt like he felt he was the protagonist of the story. And that, to me, discredits and limits other people's experiences in the game.
I can see that. I feel like, I mean, obviously there were clashes where he was trying to get his way, so that would speak to that. But I feel like people who really only see their own viewpoint have more armor than he did. Like, as I said, there was accountability in the final tribal council. The do or die stuff, like just the fact that he could kind of laugh along with this and kind of like know where his game is at, and kind of roll with some of the punches, to me, like, there's a little bit more nuance there. Like, there's a little bit more like seeing yourself as flawed, which I think he did. Like, I don't think he'd come in and say like he played the best game. Even like on Instagram last week, he put up a poll, like, how bad was the truth bomb? Like, bad or really bad? You know, like, he's kind of speaking to that. And I don't think it's just after the fact. So I think, like, someone who sees himself as a protagonist, and maybe he does, but he still saw those flaws and spoke to them, which for me, like, really kind of humanized that.
Definitely. And what's interesting is that I actually think that after he voted out Liana, and kind of like where I think he started to lose mental traction in the game is when I liked him the most.
Yeah. Well, he was really funny, and like with the do or die, when he was just like crossing his fingers. Like, I also I liked Deshaun all the time, but I really enjoyed him when he was just like struggling. Like, when he was dealing with the hourglass flip and whatever, and he's like, just the way that, like, dealing with some of the twists, dealing with how the game was going. Not at the end, because he was so down and out at the final tribal council, but when he was kind of laughing along with it, but also like pained, it was really enjoyable and entertaining to me.
Because I think he was humbled by the game.
No, definitely, that's true.
I think that the first half of the game, and even the first few of the merge and that, I felt like definitely he felt like he was the protagonist and kind of was like annoyed that other people had their own way and annoyed that other people were kind of like, you know, doing their thing. And then when he kind of realized,
lost control. I think
he lost control and realized what Survivor was really about when you're in the moment and that it's not like watching it on TV, I think that's when he finally, to me, became likable, which is interesting.
Yeah, there's something interesting there. I think that, for me, the encapsulation of all of the flaws in his game that, like, Ricard was speaking to and, like, moments we didn't even see with, like, how messy he was, but, like, there was a moment in the episode where he says to Erica, if you take me and I win, I'll take you to final three if I win at final four. And then we see him say that exact same thing to Heather, and you're like, just, like, the ability to just lie to someone's face like that, also to two allies who are definitely going to compare stories, like, just why? Like, he was just way too messy, and I think we didn't see a lot of it based on what was coming out at Final Tribal Council. But, like, if we talk about his flaws and, like, the emotionality and some luck, like, that just pure mess and chaos. Like, and it was stuff that wasn't working and that people saw badly. And, like, even, like, the truth bomb really exemplified, like, we saw in this episode, like, how much, like, Erica and Heather's bond was much stronger than his chaos. And I think just, like, that pure chaos, especially when he was losing control and maybe even without it, that was going a little bit too far. Like, that was a big flaw in his game.
Yeah, the messiness is
so messy.
It was was a lot, but like, you know, I've been messy because you just, you think what you're thinking isn't translating. I get all that. But there is one thing that is completely inexcusable, and that is that he didn't learn to make fire before he went out.
He did say that he did though.
No, he said that he couldn't get it going before he came on the show.
He said that he and his brother and dad, I think, did it for like 12 hours, but that it was like a different knife on the show or something.
Where did he say that?
I think on the show. I think like on at the very, very beginning. There's a scene with him not being able to make fire in like the first couple of episodes, and he's like, the reason I can't do it here is because of the knife being different.
Okay, well,
but then he makes fire. They always troll with the fire. We were talking about this last week in terms of like Chekhov's fire. Like, they always troll with it.
It was so obvious that he was going to get it because they kept going back so many times that he hadn't learned how to make fire, right? But
yeah.
What I gathered from what he said in the finale, I don't remember back to the beginning, was he said that I've never been able to get an actual fire going.
I think he meant and on the island. Like, but he had practice. He'd like adamantly practiced. Like, that is true.
Okay. All right. Well, then that's fine. Because that's fine. Because it doesn't matter if you can't get on the island. But for people who don't practice before they go out, especially someone whose season was delayed by COVID and you've got months and months of time, that's bad.
But, I think he practiced. I mean, Erica was saying like she like it wasn't like a play for Xander. Like, I don't know what the intention of that would have been. Like, she said at the reunion, like, I couldn't have done it, you know. And she won. Like, I don't really care about the fire thing. I really am just like anti-fire. But I am pro prep, so yeah, definitely prep for things. Definitely like learn before you go.
It's just arrogant.
What do you think that if Xander takes Erica out and makes that decision and makes fire, do you think that the Sean wins? Question that was not asked of the jury, even though it could have been, but it's fine.
Yeah, I think that. Yes, I think he does.
I think so. Again, it's hard. So divorced from the perception of the jury that we have been, but I still think that like Xander can't get past that perception. I don't think it would have been enough. And Heather is saying it wasn't really there. I think it would have come down to like, are people anti-voting to Sean? Like, is Shan that mad that she and they can like get it together to throw it on one other person? Or like, can Deshaun come in also like a little bit more confident at that final tribal council without sitting next to Erica with maybe a more favorable jury for him and also have a little bit of a better performance and capitalize on some stuff? Because I feel as well, like he said that he was fumbling stuff because he felt so down. So maybe it's even a better performance and maybe he kind of just like hits a home run with it.
I think that Xander isn't going to win because for the reasons I've said about his age, I think that Heather does steal a couple of votes because of people.
Yeah, she definitely gets Ricard and Erica.
Yeah, I think so. She gets a couple and I think Deshaun gets by with like, you know, enough.
Probably Nasir, definitely Danny, and then it would come down like Dushan and Liana. Are they going to vote for like, I really feel like there was not a lot of love for them with Heather. I feel like they probably didn't rate Xander very well. I mean, it kind of might have been split a few different ways if they're giving their votes to Xander. Heather's definitely getting a couple. Deshaun's definitely getting a couple, but I do think Deshaun, I said it last week though, I thought Deshaun would have enough against Erica. So with my possible misread, I do think Deshaun would have had enough or would have been a very interesting kind of split plurality between these three.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed Deshaun. I think that I don't think you can ask for more as a TV character. Like whether you loved him or hated him, like he brought it, like he gave great confessionals. He was really fun. Super flawed as well, which is what you want in a TV character. You don't want everyone to be shiny and new.
No, definitely.
Super vulnerable as well and spoke to like the bigger things and all of like the social themes of the season that was so important and really just like I think gave it his all. So I was really enjoying Deshaun as a TV character.
Do you know what I really liked? That impromptu interview that they did with Xander when he realized that Erica couldn't make fire. Like it was clearly just like...
Yeah, that's when he slapped himself.
Oh, was that when he did it? Oh, okay. Yeah. I love those kind of off the cuff interviews kind of thing because it's like, you know, when you're getting called for an interview, it's a long walk away. You've got to sit there while they set up the kind of, you know, it takes time. You can lose that kind of that immediacy. And I remember in season one when we were trying to get the fire for days because Andy had broken the flint and, you know, it was all this like, and I just would look so frustrated. I was on the verge of tears. I was just like, and the producer came and tapped me on the shoulder like, Nick, interview right now? And I was like, I was like, that's right, I'll at least get time to kind of like cool down.
And then you gave him the pet peeve confessional?
Yeah, and then they stopped me like in camp and like did like ask me a question like right then, and I was like, I know what you're trying to do, I'm not going to give it to you.
That's funny.
But yeah, I like that. More of those, please.
It was a fun finale for those like small character moments. Like, yeah, like, and I think we did have this cast that really just gave so much vulnerability and really offered that like throughout. And the fact that you will get Xander there, who's just like really just like the eternal optimism, but also just like loving every moment and will just like give you this like really like infectious confessional, even if he's like dying in that decision, and just like giving that much energy is so fun. I mean, Deshaun had like the fake interview with Ricard, which was like a fun moment. Like, these were characters, even like as they were stressing about like the end game, were like, let's have a little bit of fun with it. And that really came through, I feel.
Yes, agreed. Okay, I've just got a couple of pet peeves, if you will.
Of course, always.
The first one is, those trees were not dancing.
Like, they weren't dancing. They weren't wearing shoes.
How are those trees dancing any more than any other trees were dancing? That's the first one.
No, that's second one. Actually, you know, Steven said that on Know It Alls. I think like there's been some conversation around like the clue, which should have been, the word scramble is the most fun part because there's like intellect to that rather than just like finding something in the woods. And the word scramble clearly didn't give enough of a clue because Erica had way less time and still found it, and it just basically said trees, which is like the whole island. And it should have been the word scramble should have basically directed you to the thing so that you were rewarded for like that show of intellect and getting it quicker. I do agree.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the show almost knew that if you really wanted, you could just stumble around and find it, because they were like, you're not allowed to move until you solve
this. It's right there. So yeah, don't get up. Yeah.
The second thing is, like, Danny said that there are three phases to the game, right?
Yeah.
And they just seem so odd to me.
The he kept first calling one them was, quarters. Was that the pet peeve? That's third phase of math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he said it's pre-merge, the merge, and final eight.
Yeah.
What is the final eight?
I guess that if you were to, like, in episode form, like, that is roughly, like, four episodes. Five-ish episodes in that time.
The final eight? That's...
Why was he calling it quarters? That's the thing. It was thirds.
No, that's... To me, it's like the... To me, it's pre-swap, post-swap.
There was no swap.
Yeah, true. But in my head, I always think that the game is divided into four quarters, like quarters. Pre-swap, post-swap, merge, final five.
Final five? That feels late. Like, maybe final seven. Like, Shan went kind of at the end of that phase of the game, and then it was, like, end game.
Yeah.
I guess it depends where you define the end game, because there's definitely, like, it depends. I mean, in this season, the pre-merge is its own thing. In Australian Survivor, the pre-merge is as long as this whole season, so yeah, you break that up. And then it's, like, early merge, late merge, but it's just, like, where do you end game? Like, where do you draw that line? You definitely don't call it thirds, though, from a mathematical standpoint.
Yeah. Well, that just annoyed me. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is, if you are going to, like, if you're in the position where you've got the necklace, this is, I guess, isn't a pet peeve, this is just a question. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's better to just, like, come out and actually say, I'm bringing you and you two are going to fire, as a way to kind of build jury management, you're not kind of, like, lying to anyone, whatever? Or do you think it's best to just say, I haven't made my mind up and I'm going to make it a tribal council and keep everyone kind of on their toes?
I think everyone will hate that. Like, how much are they really going to get out of practicing that day? Like, and the thing is as well, if you say that, they're all just going to practice anyway, so you don't even get anything from it. You're just sending one juror out to be like, thanks for no help. Like, the day before they're going to vote, I just think that's why everyone's transparent with it. But I think that Xander had, like, an issue because... So the strategy of saying, I don't want to give Erica another moment on her resume, like, I quite like that thinking. As we said, it's like refreshing, it's a different way to think about it. And he did eventually give that to the jury, but that's like the main reason he gave to us. But then he's telling the jury, well, I don't think Erica's a threat. He's probably trying to diminish her, but instead it just looks like he has a wrong read. And if you say, I didn't want to give her another point on her resume, you're saying, I think she has an impressive resume. But they all like that because that makes sense as a read. So, like, you're caught between highlighting her threat level, which is the right read, or diminishing her, but then looking like you're completely out of the loop. So I think he, like, also really struggled with, like, communicating that to the jury.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, in terms of, I guess, pet peeves, not really. I mean, analyzing parts of the finale, the reunion was obviously this, like, very different thing, being out on the island due to necessity because of COVID. What do you feel worked and didn't work about it?
I loved it.
You loved it? Okay, cool.
I loved it. Did you?
Well, you've been out on set as well. Like, this isn't the first winner announced on the island that we've had this year as well. And you've had that happen. But in Australian Survivor, they'll do two winners and they won't actually have that moment, and they definitely won't have a reunion, which is interesting. I like parts of it. I thought it was very raw. I thought they were rehashing a bit because they couldn't really give, like, a bit of a new perspective on it because they hadn't been that and they hadn't had that time away. And I agree with Rob on Know-It-Alls when he said, like, there was a lot missed in that social commentary and social themes were such, like, a driving force of the season, and we couldn't kind of talk to the impact of that. Like, I'm sure if they have an actual reunion, the come on in guys thing is, like, definitely, for better or worse, it's, like, definitely being spoken about. My biggest issues with it, I would say, is that I felt so bad for Xander and Deshaun, mostly Deshaun. They just seemed so upset. They just lost. They hadn't expected to do this. I feel if you're going to do it, maybe give them the day and definitely, like, tell them. Like, I think blindsiding them with that when they don't really leave, like, any energy in the tank for this, it just felt like I couldn't stop thinking it was just cruel, and I couldn't get past that in viewing it. So my major thing would just be, like, just let them know that, like, this is something that's going to happen. Like, prepare for it. Leave a little bit of mental energy in the tank to go through your whole game, because I just felt it just seemed almost cruel to the losing finalist to go through this after 26 days of the game.
Absolutely, but it's also cruel to sit there and watch people who have thought they were going to win, and they've had all season where they're kind of like, oh, maybe I could win, and then they're sitting there anyway, and they're doing it in front of an audience, you know, live, and they don't get a chance to kind of cut around. Like, I think the whole thing is cruel for the people who lose.
I just think that way to just mitigate that would just be to, like, just let them know that they're doing a reunion tonight. Like, for the sake of TV, they blindsided them, and I would have preferred not. That.
Yeah, I get that. But, like, I feel like it was really cruel for the pre-mergers who, like, really want to kind of be involved. Sucks. It's like, at least they get to come to the reunion.
Yeah,
it's like,
Karen Rowan, they were off the stage, but they'll be begging to be off the stage. You don't even get to be there. That is
Yeah, and look, I've done two seasons, one where I was on stage for a reunion and one where we didn't have a reunion at all. And, like, it sucks not having a reunion. So,
yeah,
I think the pizza thing was weird and overdone, and, like, they were really trying to make a point of the pizza, and, like,
I think they hard out on pizza for the entire view. No one liked it. No one was into the whole, like, pizza thing. No one was into, like, them having to have people in the background sharing the pizza. Like, it was a shtick and it did not land.
I love how a lot were like, and we're going to bring in the set, and they had, like, oh, someone's coming through with the fire, and it's just like, you know, and there's some guy who's, like, got his head down with a camera on his shoulder walking past.
Don't look at me.
Yeah, it's like, it's so produced and so dumb. But, like, I really liked that we got it. I like that it was read there in the moment. I think that it would be such a unique experience, because the way the show is being edited would make sense to the players. Now, I know that you said that Erica kind of, like, was thinking, like, well, hold on, it looks like Deshaun's kind of the winner here. But, like, everyone would be able to watch the show. There's no real guesswork as to what is going to happen, who is being shown and why it's being shown. Imagine being someone like a Dominic and a Wendell.
Yeah.
You know, well, I think they actually did know, didn't they? Did they know?
They knew that it had been a tie and that Laurel had cast the one vote, so they would have known it was up. But
so
I was
did
even
Laurel
talking,
tell them, because it was just down to one? Anyway,
yeah, Laurel, they would have known, like, with Laurel, like, Laurel and Wendell's relationship spoke for itself. But I was talking to George about this, King George, and, you know, like, you're in the final two and you're kind of, like, looking at your edit and thinking, did I win? Hard not to, I'm sure.
Yeah, that whole, like, spending months, like, going, oh, maybe they wouldn't have included that if I'm the winner. Maybe, you know, that trauma. Like, I like that it's just put out of their misery. I don't think we need the live vote and reveal anymore. I really don't like, I hate the vibe of a reunion. I love getting to see everyone again. But as the show has gone on and on, the reunion to me is so much more awkward than it is the positives, because the audience and then people fumbling around for an answer, and then Jeff's kind of like wanting to give them their moment, but then kind of like going, and you were also there, and like saying it, and then like who doesn't get a question and who does. And, you know, the All-Stars reunion, like I answered several questions, but they didn't make the air. And then there's that kind of weirdness, like, oh, why was that not? You know, just like so much weirdness and awkwardness, and you got to, you know, who's looking at what and who's sitting next to who. And I hate it. Get rid of it. This is a much cleaner way to do it. Let's just go on with this from now on. It's a time saver as well. We don't need the kind of like they're bringing the kid out from the audience.
No one likes the kid. Everyone hates that kid. That also, as much as the pizza, what is more like a hated part of these two reunion formats?
I'll take the pizza, because I do like the idea of Erica being like, yeah, please, can I have a piece of pizza? Like, you know, like that's way better. just get. I'm very happy now that this is what we're going to do.
I don't know if this is what we're going to do. This is like a COVID thing.
No, but please don't go back. Let's just do this.
I think that's a hot take to be like, we're never going back to a live reunion. Like, I mean, there are pros and cons, but committing to never having the pre-jurors again feels like a lot to me.
That is the sad. That's the one sad part, right? And what I think the way around it, I really truly think the way around it is,
like most is things.
No. I like the immediacy. I like that they're in the game. I like that they've just voted. I like that they haven't seen the show yet. So everyone's not being all like, you know, taking that moment to kind of try and like fix the perception or being like, well, that person got more airtime than me, so I'm going to try and snatch it here at the reunion. I think that in America, they don't even send the other people straight home. Take them on a little trip to Australia for 2 weeks. Fly back through Fiji, which you have to do anyway. Have the pre-jurors come out, get to ask them some questions, and then send everyone back home, you know? Like, and if it is a COVID thing, I bet you they're all in Fiji still anyway.
No, so this season they actually went home. This was like the one season where they all actually went home. So this season they could, in other seasons where that is the format, I think that is a good idea. I think having the pre-jurors is essential if this is going to be the format, which I don't think it is going to be, but if that's what they're looking to, definitely the pre-jurors, the fact that they might know about it, maybe even give them the day, I don't know, give them an hour. It just felt like a lot, but it was very raw. And I think that you can say, the regular reunions, A, that kid is there. We hate the like nebulous kid that is the one that always, and Cochran. I mean, nothing against Cochran, but like we actually spoke to the jurors, which was good, and the actual cast. And I actually feel like they all kind of got their moment, like in the final tribal council and the reunion, which is rare. Like I feel like we got a lot of character moments from like the whole jury and the merge cast, which is really fun. But yeah, it usually does feel a little bit prep. Like I think like what it is that Jeff calls them before and is like, this is the question I'm going to ask. And it's more like an interview process where they know exactly, because it's live, it has to be. So for the US, it is live. It has to be just like, they know exactly what you're going to say. They can't have any surprises. Whereas like, this was like, let's like have a conversation and be a bit raw about it. And that like rawness, I did appreciate more. But then I think like being able to talk about like how the season has impacted and watching it back and especially for this season, that would have also been quite significant and really interesting to see and probably more important than ever. So like, I think pros and cons, but I think definitely a hot take from you that you're like, let's never hit the studio ever again. They probably make money from those reunions. Like they probably, you know, they bring the fans in as well, which is something.
No, see, I actually, I'm always thinking about the money, even in the show. I'm like, wow, they would have spent so much on that reward. They really need to build that giant tower for that challenge when they could have just, you know, and I'm thinking like that reunion. The reunion costs so much money.
And they paid them all $10,000 to be there. And they
Insane to me. After having played Australian Survivor, that is
insane. You don't get anything.
Insane.
Yeah, you pay the show in Australian Survivor to be a part of it.
Oh, my God.
You have to pay your own flights to Sydney for the All-Stars reunion.
Yeah, no, not quite. But basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like we're good. We can figure out a way to do it where we don't have to have the awkwardness, and I think that this is great. I think this is the way forward.
Interesting. So let's like put a bit of a fine point on it before we get to the chizzy. Like, where watching it in a different way as you did, kind of like major highs and lows of the season, like just how you kind of feel about the season overall, and roughly where you would kind of rank it, like top, middle, kind of tier, where you'd put it.
Okay, so I think the cast was excellent.
So good, yeah.
I think I didn't feel like I was watching a truncated version of Survivor, so that doesn't hinder it in any way for me. I really like the winner. I didn't have a major issue with the twists, like, you know, that hopefully they're going to be polished up a little bit more if they're used in the future. But I would say that this is a solid middle season for me. The bottom of the middle chunk, if that makes sense.
So what? Give me a number. Put a number on.
Like 26.
Oh, wow. So that's quite low.
26, I'd say. Yeah, 27, some of that.
There's a lot of good seasons. I mean, I'd have to look at the list of that I have and that I did for the rankings like a year ago. But like sight unseen, I still feel like 15 to 20 for me, like top middle probably.
Okay.
I felt it was refreshing. I feel the cast is phenomenal. We have a question coming up about like a, you know, maybe returnees kind of, and it just like thinking about trying to even get returnees out of this cast. Like there's so many options. It really just was an exceptional cast. I think it had like clear storylines with Shan's narrative, like the camp out storyline, which Deshaun carried through to the end. I think, yeah, I obviously have had my issues with the edit, but I think a lot of the editing was really fun. We had like the big moment with like Nasir's flashback, for example. And I feel like the new era and that like refreshing approach was really validated by the different way in which the jury saw the game. So it kind of tied all of that together for me. But yeah, the twist probably hit and miss. Shot in the Dark added some wrinkles. We've spoken about it. Some really fun moments.
Shot in the Dark was underutilized for sure.
Yeah. And we've spoken about like the impact it can have. It does seem from interviews that Jeff will be bringing it back. It feels maybe like it'll be a bit of a staple. That's the vibe that I'm getting. Some fun stuff with the Beware Advantage. Like, it definitely was too much overall, and I think distracted from the cast. The cliffhanger episode for me was, like, so bad and for no reason. It was, like, the only bad episode for me of the whole season. Like, you binged it, Nick. We had to talk about that for a whole week. Like, it was a lot.
I was going to say, this is, I think, what the benefit is if they do things like that. I was like, within 3 seconds, the next episode started. I was like, oh,
yeah,
cool,
exactly. Well, that's what we were saying. Everyone was saying that at the time. They're like, this will play better on a binge. And believe me, like, we still did a podcast. I was with Haley that week. We had a great conversation, but I wanted to talk about someone going home. So that episode, I think, was like an extreme low light of an otherwise really fun season. And maybe speaks for a little bit of like how some of the twists detracted. Like, the Hourglass twist to me was easily the most egregious, but I still think the cast carried it through. So
I think there's some real meat on the Hourglass bone. I think there's some really good stuff there that they haven't figured it out just yet, but when they do, it's going to be good.
The idea of time travel sounds fun. I think that's where it came from. My issue is that, like, so Jeff said in an interview that it's all about the people in the cast. And I think if that's true, throwing that many twists at them is like a weird way to show that. Like, he's saying it's because, well, the cast will decide what to do with the twist. It's like, I guess. But you could also just make it about the people. And then the Hourglass twist to me is like the most against that, because he's saying it's all about their decisions. And everyone at the time was saying Erica had no decision. No one was mad at her. It was obvious that this is what she had to choose. Anyone would. It was a manufactured decision. So if that's what he's going for, like, see how someone like Xander reacts to Beware. Does Shan take the advantage when she knows what it is? Like, there's definitely something there. Like, how much does Shot in the Dark pressure decisions? Like, how is it just kind of like working into the social strategy? There's stuff there, but the Hourglass twist does not exist in that. Like, it's very outside of that. So that was a failing, I think, of what Jeff is trying to do with the twist.
Sure, but I think the Hourglass thing has some real potential. The thing that I thought was dumb were those hikes and the wheel.
Shipwheel Island is what we call it. That's we made the community made that name up. You wouldn't know the name because you out of the conversation.
More like Shitwheel Island. That was dumb.
It's taken 13 weeks and you're the first one probably to do that.
Really?
Probably.
No way.
I think so. In what I've listened to, you're the first one who went with Shitwheel Island. Yeah, that's not surprising, actually. Mm. You didn't like any of that?
No, none of it.
I mean, I thought it was fun at first. We really spoke, like, this is what you missed. We really spoke through the decisions and why it wasn't a prisoner's dilemma, et cetera, et cetera. But then, like, when they kept going back there, we were like, okay, move on.
Like people interacting from different things, but just send them to exile. Like,
People really did enjoy those cross-tribe communications. And I do think that in a season like this, when they didn't have a swap, when it is a shorter season, when every connection is crucial, that was like an underratedly important part of the production, that they did have those relationships form. And then you came in the merge with this like already created Evie DeShawn dynamic, obviously Shan and Liana, like Xander and Danny, that's something. Like, if you're not going to have a swap, and even if you do have a swap, but you just have a shorter season, you need to maximize on just like broader connections, and those external islands and connections are imperative to that.
Yeah.
Because season 42, I mean, this is what they said about season 42. They're like, the Beware Advantage will be there. It's the most dangerous season ever. Relentless pace. I'm like, this is season 41. What is different about what they're... I don't know. It seems like the exact same structure to what we just got.
Can I just say that in general, I thought that Survivor was going to be way more different than it is. I thought they were going to fundamentally alter...
Like what?
...the structure of the show. I don't even know. But I was expecting that they were like... This is just, it just added, it was just twists, just different twists.
But I guess there was swap was like, it really threw people off. And the shorter game. But yeah, it was mostly just, it was Survivor, but like refreshingly so.
Yeah, I thought they were going to change it up completely. Yeah.
Well, it seems like this is a bit of a mold, and maybe 42 will be in that vein, so... Yeah, it was a fun time. Yeah. I definitely had fun with it. We watched it in the most opposite ways possible, and we come to similar conclusions about the fun that we had with it. So it must be just like a fun season.
Definitely.
Yeah. So should we get to the Chizzy? You know nothing about the Chizzy. We're going to get maybe, we'll get your thoughts and then your guesses, which is fun.
Okay.
So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. One, two, three.
All right, I will give my points and then you're gonna guess where you think people kind of landed up on the charts. But obviously 3 to Erica. She slayed Ricard, which she needed to do in the situation she'd presented for herself. The mystery by Xander at 4 could be on her managing that threat level as well. You could probably give her some credit there. That with the Final Tribal Council very well, spoke very well, won the game, obviously very decisively. And also just like seeing that bond with Heather and Ricard that we hadn't seen, it also kind of elevates the game in hindsight, and that external content takes away some of the flaws. So like absolutely like a great few days for Erica. I'm going to give 2 points to Heather. I think just honoring how important that relationship, which is something I've not given points to until now, spoiler for you, Nick, because I don't think we just saw how tight it was and just the real bond that they had and how much comfort they gave each other. I think that's like really quite a special thing to create in the game. And they were a very important duo, and I want to kind of honor Heather in that, even though, you know, the edit kind of ruled her out of our analysis for pretty much the whole season, which for someone who comes fourth isn't great, and it still kind of hurts that I feel bad every time I come in and like have to talk about everyone at length and there's not as much there with Heather, but I will give her 2 points for that. And then I'm going to give a point to Deshaun for making the fire and for getting a vote. It was hard, like Ricard goes out at 5th, he can't, like, he almost really won that challenge and he seems to think it was really on the advantage that he lost, but he like needs to deliver on that. And for Xander, like, I just disagree so much with the decision at 4, and I think he actively kind of damaged his game, but it was a poor decision. Like, had he made the opposite decision, I think it would have elevated his game. Like, even if he hadn't won fire, I probably would give him a point for just like making the decision I agreed with. Even if he'd done it and still gotten 0 votes, like just making that decision for me, which I felt was so correct, I would have given a point too, but I disagree, so I can't do that. Then obviously with the negative perception stuff, like he's been getting points through the season due to possibly some perception that wasn't there. So I also I feel like I can't give more points in that now that I know what that perception was. So those are my points. And Nick, what will your points be?
So 3 for Erica. I'm not going to kind of go over what you've already said,
because
you said it brilliantly. I'm going to give 2 to Xander.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I take all your points, but I just feel like he played a really good game. I think he's really likable. I think that I honestly keep going back to this idea of his age. I think that if he was 35 or 25 or something, I think he's taken a lot more seriously because he did some really great things and he was a challenge like beast in some capacity. And he has so many of the right things. He has a lot of interesting reads. I really liked his kind of whole analysis of the fire situation. I don't at all blame him for not putting himself in. I wouldn't do it. I genuinely would not do it. And yes, his read was off, but how many survivors' reads are off? So I give him 2 points,
mm-hmm.
and I give 1 point to Heather,
yep.
because of the what you said. You basically took the words out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. That dynamic there. A pair in Survivor, it's very rare that it's like one person making all the shots and the other person, you know, the other person just going along blindly. Like, and I think in this case, I think it was much more the two of them doing it together. But we just didn't really see that because Heather's perhaps not as dynamic and didn't win. So I don't know. I just feel like Heather should get more props than she does. I think, and I like this interesting scenario that we pose of what happens if Heather makes it to the final. I do think she gets some votes, and that's more than the other two did.
She definitely would get votes. Yeah, she definitely would.
So
if Erica's not there, she's getting Erica. She's definitely getting Ricard. He said as much if she's not next to Erica. So depends who she's next to. If she's next to Erica, she might not be getting any votes. But without Erica there, she's got some.
Yeah, so I think she deserves a point.
So, okay, I'm going to read out the charts. Who do you think won the Chizzy?
Well, I think Shan was like absolutely sweeping the floor up until the moment she was voted out. And I think that Ricard also was getting stuff, and perhaps because he was there longer, he is at the top. I'm gonna still say that Shan.
So Shan got like some of the best rates. Again, Rob's Fact Check on Twitter was giving like some of the best rates in the pre-merge. She got like 70% of available votes like 5 episodes in, but then only got 1 vote after that. So Ricard actually won the Chizzy. Where do you think Erica, what number do you think Erica came?
sixth.
Yes, she came tied sixth. So, I mean, that is obviously not super high for a winner. There is, again, like, had we maybe seen some other stuff like her really, like, putting the Underdog Alliance in action, for example, and, like, what she was doing with that. Yeah. Possibly she gets more points, as I'm saying, like, some things in hindsight with the finale content, with external content, have been elevated. But I do think it kind of does speak to, that's probably, you know, maybe where Adam ends up in his, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't, like, the most dominant game. She wasn't, like, super leading it, and she didn't need to be. Like, she says it doesn't need to have been pretty and flashy. She just needed to get there. She achieved exactly what she set out to achieve, and that's, like, you know, completely a credit to her. But for the cheesy, when it's, like, big moves and, like, every week, like, looking at it week to week, it's not something she's necessarily going to score as well in. And as well, that she just had the least to do for, like, six episodes where the whole pre-merger, you know, they're not going to Tribal Council. Deshaun was getting, like, points, for example, in his interaction with Abby. Like, she's not going to the external islands. Like, she basically missed, like, a third of the season, or a quarter, if you want to call it that, where there's, like, not a lot of points available to her because there's just so little going on. So with that, she obviously comes from behind it and does win and comes sixth in the shizzy. So impressive there.
Very good. Who are the other people at the top?
All right, so these are the charts. Ricard won with 28 points. Great job, Ricard. I think he played an exceptional game. I will be reaching out about sending him a mug because that's something I'm doing now. Shan then came second on 22, as tied with Xander now, who came second with her on 22. Deshaun, with my point, went up to 20, coming fourth. Danny got 15. Evie and Erica ended up on 14. And then there was Liana on 5, Nasir on 5, Heather went up now to 4. We just gave her 3 points, and she had 1 before that, so she's on 4 now. Tiffany left on 3, Sydney on 2, Jeannie on 1, and JD on 1. So that's where it should go.
JD, oh my god.
Yeah, I gave him a point for
money.
Yeah, no, what did I give JD a point for? I think it was that I liked how he was using the extra vote socially, because I think the extra vote is fairly useless, although definitely best used in the season, and it carries on the revote, which is something we discovered, which we'll talk about. We have a question on that, but yeah, I gave him a point for, like, using that socially. So congratulations to Ricard. Thank you so much to Randy Newpool all season for the incredible charts that we put on Twitter.
Good job, Randy.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Another really fun season of the Chizzy. We had Haley win the Chizzy. We had Kieran win the Chizzy. Another fifth placer, and Ricard. So 3 exceptional players for sure who will all be getting mugs. But question time. So Jason Gates, my brother slash intern, did ask, what was Nick's reaction to the extra vote carrying over to the revote in US Survivor? Because I know there was, like, something happened for you where I was one of them, and you got, like, 30 or so messages being like, did your extra vote get carried through the revote? And you're like, something has happened on Survivor. That's clear to me.
I know, because I wasn't watching this season live, I'm just, like, going about my regular day, I'm at work on a Thursday, just chilling.
Yeah.
And then RIP my DMs on all platforms.
Yeah.
People reminding me that my extra vote didn't carry through.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I was like, but I know that it doesn't because of Nick, you know? And there was, like, this other, like, things in US Survivor that made me think it didn't carry, even though it does. But I feel like how hurt I was by how useless your extra vote was has really, like, driven my narrative about how much I hate that advantage and, like, the thought that I had that it didn't carry. And that's, like, really all on you and how much it, like, didn't protect you and how mad I am about that.
Good, I'm glad. Yeah, there's going to be something that came from it. Useless. When I saw Shan and Ricard, I tweeted this, when Shan and Ricard were fighting over the extra vote, I'm like, no. An ally in a relationship is so much more important than the worst fucking advantage you can get. I'm so
Yeah, basically what I would say. But, like, then they used it on this really fun split. To be cautious, they didn't need it for Nasir, but, like, the most innovative way that the vote's been used. And then Xander has said that he showed Erica the vote, that he was going to play it at the final 7 and go to rocks because it does carry through the revote, which makes it that much more. Both of these situations relied on it carrying through the revote, which it did. Maybe that's why Erica made the decision. But then Erica and Exodus was kind of speaking to her own decision in that and, like, speaking with Ricard and, like, not being able to work with Liana. So you'd really have to, like, ask Erica how much that factored into her decision, because, yeah, it's still TBD on it actually deciding a vote, because that would be the closest Xander at the final 7.
Right. Interesting
one for sure. Melanie Davis asks, I missed the finalists giving a speech before the questions started. I felt like it gave a nice way for them all to articulate the game. Why do you think they cut that? Yeah, like, no opening or closing statements for this final Tribal Council.
Yeah, I think that the show made it's okay, so every time that there's a jury I feel, and I know this from my experience from the seasons I've been a part of, they ask someone to kind of like make an opening statement that kind of like is like a bit of a congratulations or a bit of a good job.
Yeah.
So the show makes that happen. And I also think that if they do that, then they might maybe made Danny say like, can you all articulate? And then he was like the kind of adjudicator of one, two, three going through it. So I think they kind of bake it into the actual questions.
Because Xander said in Exit that he felt like because he didn't have that opportunity that he felt like he couldn't just like speak to things like he'd made fake idols. And so obviously he had like fits the mold, but like he couldn't speak to that because he felt like he could only answer the questions presented to him. So if he'd had maybe like an opening and closing statement, maybe he could have peppered that in, but maybe.
No, that's a dumb answer. That's dumb because you get to say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like you can answer that question and then you can say, and I would like to also take this opportunity. This is what I'm saying. He doesn't have that killer instinct to just kind of like take the ball by the horns and say all the other things that you want to say.
It's like when I was in high school and we had like English essays, we'd have like everything or history essays. We knew like what we needed to say, but then we go into the exam and have like the specific questions. And I would be like, side point, not like leaving that information out. I studied about it and I know about it.
Yes.
You're going to hear about it too. So yeah, he probably could have like, maybe if Danny was the one giving him that platform, like maybe it was a little bit too structured. Maybe it should have been more open-ended, like speak to your game. But I agree. Like say what you're going to say, like side point, like butt in, like say, you know, leave it all out on the table. That is probably true. And I think have an opening and closing statement because it just makes sense. And I want to see how they narrate their game from their own words, like without anyone prompting them, like how they see themselves and how they want you to see them. I think that's important. But I also think within that find, you can find whatever you want to say. And they also didn't have the outwit, out play out last, which everyone liked because that made no sense and was like always really clunky.
Thank God. I hated that.
Yeah, I agree that it's much better, but I will always say the old format reigns supreme. I'm sorry. It's just not as dramatic as it used to be. Like,
I agree.
Shan is standing up and saying that to Deshaun, and it's like the moment, I bet it's more of a moment. Like, it was already pretty brutal, but like, you can't compete with the drama of the old format. Like, I don't want everyone sitting around in a circle and talking about it. Like, I want to make TV with people like, saying speeches.
I agree. I know it's a time thing. That's what they want to have to show boring questions and all that, and people repeat themselves. But I am so grateful that I got to play Survivor. But God, one of the things I'm grateful for is that I got the old format on a jury. Yep.
Had your moment. It's important.
Had my moment. Yep.
Adam K asks, which twist is Australian Survivor stealing first?
The shared immunity that has to be kind of discussed across. Like some sort of activation of an idol across tribes.
The idea that they'd have to be like specifically Australian phrases is a fun avenue for my mind to come out. Oh, I have to say, put some shrimp on the barbie. How am I going to work that into conversation?
God, I'm feeling saltier than a jar of Vegemite today.
Exactly. The hourglass twist was a non-elimination for no reason. So I guess sense, at least it would give them a non-elim. So maybe they're looking at it.
And the do or die thing.
Oh,
that was
God.
Kind of, that felt very Australian.
The way that Australian Survivor will take twists I already don't like and possibly bastardize them further is a concern to me. what do you think? Which one?
I think the idols being activated across tribes.
I had this vision in my mind when we're watching like the montage of like their day 26 montage and Erica shows her like smashing the hourglass and Deshaun with the tiny boxes and do or die, and I'm like, this is at a point this is gonna like feel like self-parody. Like I tick this off my bucket list. I'm like, in seasons 50 it's gonna be like things we can't even comprehend. Like I had like I really played the perfect Survivor game. I won immunity, I found an idol, I took a spin in the vortex of doom and lived to tell the tale. I'm like, where is this gonna go? Because the hourglass thing is already strange and do or die is weird.
Yeah.
And like, who knows in 10 seasons what the montages are gonna be.
I balanced the plate of destiny and grew the tree of hope.
Yeah, I carried the baby of salvation for 14 days and no one knew about it. That baby cried and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, but I think the options are endless for sure. And the last
baby
question,
of salvation.
Yeah, baby of salvation. I don't know where my mind goes. Last question for the whole year. Crazy thing. Julian Rappaport asked, who would make up a global all-star season from this year? US, AU, and SA. Three tribes of six each. Can we do this? Because I was thinking about it, and it's hard because these cards are so good. But it's a really fun
question. That's great. I love it. I love that. And I feel like you're a bit too close to it to just kind of make a snap decision because you love all of them, particularly SA.
Well, yeah, I do love all these casts, but we're going to split it by season, so everyone's going to be well represented. I think, okay, let's start. So for Australian Survivor, for the women, I think I would definitely go Hayley. That's 100%. And then I would want like two of three of like Shannon, Danny, and Flick. Definitely like some arguments for like Wei, for example, but I feel like those are the standouts for me.
I think Hayley is a given.
Yeah.
I think Flick, I think I mentioned on our podcast together that Flick is someone I'm probably the most interested in seeing again.
Yep.
And then after that, give me Shannon. But I know that it wouldn't be Shannon over Danny. So.
And then I think definitely George goes without saying. I'm very high on Simon. And I like Emmett, you could throw in there, but I think like Simon and Emmett together might be a bit much. And we've probably seen a lot of what Emmett can bring. Like I really enjoyed Emmett, but I feel like he might be a bit one note. He worked for the whole season, but like in the second season, is he delivering more? I'm not 100% sure. I think give me Phil. I think Phil really deserves a second chance. They got completely screwed over, and I would like to see it. And also the show really owes it to them.
Definitely George, definitely Simon. I'm not interested in seeing Emmett again personally, but like I loved what he brought to the show. But there is a bit of a void after that, right? I loved Baden, but I don't want to see him again.
Joey maybe?
Definitely don't want to see Joey again.
Tell us how you really feel. Yeah.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. I'm going to agree with Phil. Like that's a deep, deep cut, obviously, but I agree with you.
Yeah. So Phil, Simon, George, Hayley, Flick, and Shannon. We really decided. I feel like that feels really good.
That would be great.
Okay, that's the Australian tribe represent. So the South African tribe is so hard. The cast is amazing. Men, I'm going Chappies, Kieran, Dino. I mean, obviously a lot slided there. Like I pretty much see most people like Mike Laws, I would want to see back. Rainier, obviously a big one. Smash is someone I would see. Sean, pretty much like most of the post-merge cast as well. Also like some great pre-merges. For the men, I'd go Chappies, Kieran, Dino. Thoughts on that?
That's absolutely what I was going to say. Chappies is so funny. And Kieran had such a great head for the game. Tyson was not great TV for me because I couldn't get over his monotone voice, even when he was doing like
Tyson is someone I didn't mention. I would put Tyson in contention. I just think Tyson and Kieran together is a lot, and I would lean Kieran for an All-Stars right now.
No, love Dino. Love Dino.
Yeah. The women on that season, this is like near impossible. So you definitely want Santini. That's like for me, 100%. Yeah. She's the star of the season. Then you're looking at like Anesu, Amy, Carla, Teresa. Like, do you think two of that is a really tough one for me? Obviously, Nicole won, so you put her in contention there. It's a tough one. Who would you lean towards?
I loved Anesu, so that's a no-brainer for me. Mm-hmm. Loved Anesu, and I would probably go Nicole.
Yeah, Carla and Teresa as two pre-merges I think could bring a lot. I'd be very interested in seeing both of
Teresa,
them.
Teresa, yeah, Teresa was good. Yeah.
I might say Teresa, Anesu, Santini.
I'd watch the shit out of that. That is great.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know that we can definitively do it as well as we did Australia, but the men I think we're confirmed on. The women I'm still struggling with.
Can I do the American one?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Give me what you think. Because I also struggled with this one. It's such a good card. You're trying to narrow 18 down to 6 and it's a struggle.
Okay. For the men, Xander, Danny, and Nasir. How do we feel about that?
Ricard would be my first pick.
Oh, sorry, Ricard. Yeah. Ricard. Completely forgot Ricard.
This is going well.
Forget Danny. I want to see Nasir, Ricard, and Xander for sure.
I think that's a pretty good bet. Those were definitely all in contention for me. Danny would be in contention. I think the Sean I would think about. JD I would think about.
No.
You wouldn't go back to JD?
He was great. He was great fun, but not as fun as Nasir, not as fun as Ricard, and not as good as Xander, like as much as I loved Xander. So, no.
I think those are the three the show would probably pick now. Like maybe you bring back JD at a point, but for like this season right now. Definitely Ricard. The show would not go past Nasir. Xander, I think, yes. I could replace Nasir possibly with Deshaun. I mean, I think Nasir was great, but we got a lot out of it already. Deshaun might grow because he's, like, really looking at that. I think those are all good options.
Okay, the girls?
So, definitely Shan, number one pick.
Definitely
on the board.
Shan.
For me, Shan and Evie and Ricard are, like, my top three picks from the season. So I'd definitely go Shan and Evie. You definitely would look at Erica, and especially if we have Haley there, especially if you choose Nicole, you want the winners. And then Tiffany I would look at. So for me, I would definitely do Shan and Evie, and then Tiffany and Erica would be I'd be between those two.
Yeah, it's hard because I did love me some Tiffany. But I would actually kind of perhaps choose Tiffany over Evie, but I do appreciate, I loved Evie's game. I like the way she spoke. So to me, Shan is a definite. I want to see Erica again, but I kind of feel like I want to see Evie and Tiffany a bit more, but you can't put them both on. Can you put both on together?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, you've got Shan and Ricard.
All right, well, let's see Erica out. She's won. We went against Nicole in the end, so forget them. Let's go Tiffany, Evie, and Shan.
And Haley is the only winner, is just like first boot. What do we do?
That's fine.
We just doom Haley. Fine. No, I don't
that's
want
fine. Haley's good enough. Haley's great. She'll win it. I have all the faith in the world that Haley would win again.
I don't know how she did it, but she did just win. How did she do that? How did she just win the season? Like, maybe. I think that is such a great season. Like, it really just, like, such a good question to put such a fine point on the three seasons of 2021 Survivor that I was lucky enough to cover this year. Like, I do feel supremely fortunate. I also did Champions at the beginning of the year with Mike, which I loved. I have covered 71 episodes of Survivor this year and three rankings. So I'm going to take a little bit of a mental break for about a week, but I have been so lucky.
I don't know.
I'm sure I'll be back to it soon, but I really just enjoyed all three of these seasons so much. I really enjoyed these casts, these players, like some big moments, like looking back at Survivor I've consumed over the past few months to a year. And again, like really loving Champions as well. Like I feel like as viewers, we've been really lucky. And as a podcaster, like I've really had a great time with it.
I think that you have done a fantastic job as always. I think you need longer than a week. I think even though tonight is the trailer for the new Australia.
I'm really excited. Yeah, there's a Blood versus Water trailer that'll probably be out before this podcast is out. When I saw that, which I saw right after the finale, I was like, I need a holiday. Like I can't keep going back. But we'll rally, we'll go and we'll be excited for Blood versus Water and a trailer that is dropping imminently.
Unless you are doing your pet peeves podcast, which I think would be so fun, you are not allowed to pick up a microphone. Doctor's orders, and you need to just kind of take a break. But thank you for everything. It's been a great year of Survivor, particularly after, you know, a big long break. Mm. And I think it's just what the doctor ordered. So, yeah.
Mm.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me do this again and making me binge a season that I probably would have just kept putting off and off and off.
Yeah, I'll keep pressuring you to watch U.S. Survivor season so that you can do the finale, obviously, because it is tradition now, like three seasons running. Every season I've done global, you have done the finale, and we will continue to do so. And Nick, where can people find you for your, you know, hot AU Survivor takes, but like cold U.S. Survivor takes, because that's the way that you're watching it? Although you came up with Shitville Island all by yourself, and you said that they should never go back to the reunion, but like you can bring the hot takes no matter when you're watching.
Look, the hot takes come. You've just got to wade through all the steamingly, like, stale, frozen
ones.
No, it's always hot. I'm on Twitter at Nick Iadanza, same as on Instagram. I probably put more stuff on Instagram these days, but Twitter is where I talk about TV, talk about, you know, Real Housewives. That's where I mentioned my, you know, love of Survivor. But, yeah, definitely when AU is on, I am, like, hot on the Twitter. So I would love to chat to you all then. Please don't be the person who slid into my DM saying the winner before I watched the finale of this season. That kind of ruined it. But like I said, I could see it coming anyway. So it wasn't too much of a spoiler. But I'd love to chat to you all and hit me up and let's continue the convo.
Be aware of Nick's strange viewing schedule. Only DM him about the extra vote. But DM about the extra vote all the time. There doesn't have to be anything about an extra vote happening on the show. Just, like, slide into his DMs about the extra vote at any given time. That's a good idea. And you can follow me at Shannon Gates and subscribe, as always, to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed. We'll be back for Blood versus Water in February, as mentioned, and then, of course, for Survivor 42 in March. I don't know if we'll be doing, I don't know about like this tiny little doesn't even count as an off season, but I know some people want Mike and I to kind of do basically what we did at the end of this podcast, but more about comparing the three seasons. It's something I'll have to step away from the podcast for just about a day to think about if we need it.
No, no, guys, it's not happening.
We're interested in it.
Putting an intervening restraining.
We might do it. We're going to think about it. So keep an eye on the feed just in case that happens. I also have to move. Things have to be done, but I might be podcasting. We'll see how it goes. I also wanted to say Paramount Plus continues to add these international seasons. It, of course, has one of your seasons, Nick. It has 2019, 2020, and 2021 Australian Survivor. And now it has Survivor South Africa Season 8, which was this year's season, and Survivor New Zealand Season 2, which is the first season I covered. So I'm going to put out a tweet with that with all the coverage for South Africa and New Zealand, which is brand new on there. But yeah, all those seasons are on if you want to check out more of the international coverage that you maybe haven't seen. And I do have coverage for all of those seasons. So hopefully people check that out. But I do just want to thank everyone so much in this kind of wrap-up podcast until I pick up a mic again tomorrow. But no, you know. So 4 seasons covered this year, a lot of content. I really just want to thank all my amazing guests, Nick, you included, my family and Peter as well for all the support through all of that work. And everyone who's followed along, sent nice messages. Just like, I really appreciate getting to chat with the community 99% of the time, you know, and engage with us. And I really appreciate everyone for listening and checking this out. And this is like the 8th RJP podcast about US Survivor a week, and people still check it out. And that will never not be so cool to me. So thank you so much. But yeah, that is all that I have. Thank you again to everyone for listening. Nick, thank you so much again for joining me on the finale podcast and continuing the tradition. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you guys at some point. I don't know when, but for another podcast soon, and definitely for Blood vs. Water. So keep an eye on the feed and I will see you next time. Bye.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans,
12
ordinary Australians,
16
New Zealanders, 20
middle, give them the
swamp. £1 million.
Million
euro.
Million.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe
spoke.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.